Blog Talk Radio.
My hands are
wall. My feet is a brass. The crystals that resonate, cause life to ever last. Multidimensional, and with that I conclude a class. Teach it, scribe of all laws, that's the secret. And code 3 states it takes 7 lifetimes to reach it. In this space of time, I write rhymes, they try to breach it. The example, apple, essence, and what's needed. Y'all just believe it, but see me what I receive it. Translated to act like telekinesis. I'm at my freest at my office. This lightning left of the galactic centers the way I'm offset. Like a spiral, like a straw set. If we hit a rap and did it like Alpha Paw Prince. It's been a while since you really got what you was looking for. Like more exploring borders through Georgia's corridors. The orators viewing spores of Muir's door. Homegrown scrolls while twisting doors. Soon hitting shores like shipwreck. Extending the legacy of the Toltec. Much respect to the prop getters, not the propagandists. What in with stands and overstanding, how to transmit. Plus a major line of defense against any threats to the planet. And Lantern going green as a hawk through Pan's Labyrinth. Changing shape shifts to being precious metals like a blacksmith. Outlining new slammer blasts that burn like acid. This is classic, like Cairo scrolls of the ancients. Good as gold for backing banking. I roll with God, that's who I'm thanking. Being baked serious, but y'all can call me Franklin.
Life in a tissue is always sacrificial. Noise blasting missiles. They opening portals and recalling autos, shifting things. Probably about to introduce whips with Wayne. How else they gonna outrun Popo? It's just piloting autos, flying whips and spaceships. Straight out the pages of Philip K. Dick. Fuck the Terror Dome, welcome to the Matrix. Alkalize or die, shit's falling out the sky. Man, these crackers is terrified, paralyzed, fearing the unknown. Hearing the trumps blow, before defeat, they retreat across the River Styx. They got you blind all the time, about the truth of the 666. Man, it's carbon, man, the first shall be last on his sovereign land. 6 neutrons, 6 electrons, plus 6 protons. Equals a cosmic mortal, emerging out a cosmic portal, according to the Dogon. Transformed like Voltron, due to a rise in the lies, I kept my eyes on a prize like Lionel. Shit, sight me on sight like Obadiah. I could see Zion well from the mountaintop. Yeah, abundant land, a boundless lot. Expose these liars like roaches, light beyond light. Holy fire, my offer. You're baptized in the raptures of holy waters. Riding on chariots into this age of Aquarius. Stars of the belts made out of photons like Orion's cells. We stuntin', something serious be by far. The pictures I paint been tri-star, so I excel. Observe me in all of my splendor. High as hell. Blue pill. That's how we do. Royal Immortals, my East Coast. Super Hate Rules. You know how we do. Y'all think this a motherfucking game? We ain't playing. They flap their wings on this one. Trust Sound, Trust Studio. That's how we go. Brooklyn, ATL. Michigan. Athens, LA.
Peace to you and yours. This is Know the Ledge Radio, and you and I are rocking with the best. Indeed, family. Welcome back to another historic episode. You know what I'm saying? KTL is in the ATL. We are broadcasting live and direct. You feel me? From the 33-degree parallel line, tapping in, getting it in, and everything in between and above. Okay? Tonight's episode that we present to you is a very special one, a very dear one. It is continuing, uncovering, and unveiling in this quote-unquote month of Black history. We are uncovering our ancestral indigenous history here in the quote-unquote Americas, you know what I mean? Unveiling, uncovering, and bringing to the family a wealth of information that the family now have to arm themselves with so they could deal with, you know, a whole different aspect of how they're approaching this this particular month, you know what I mean? So tonight's show is Pyramids in America. you heard me right, Pyramids in America. I received some mail this week, you know, from some people that don't know how to deal with the emotional aspect of what they're seeing going on in Kemet. You know what I'm saying? Some people are letting their emotions get the best of them, and that's understood because there's no balance, you know what I mean? And when things are unbalanced, you know, the first thing that happens is people become reactionary, and then when people become reactionary, they tip over the scales, and their emotions start spilling out. So I understand that particular aspect of things, but not to negate the pyramids in Kemet, but we have to be mindful of that which is in our backyard, that which is most accessible to us at this particular time, which are the pyramids right in the Americas. You know what I'm saying? And the Mayan culture that also exists in the Americas, which were very integral to our existence on this particular landmass, because we were the caretakers of this particular landmass, very much responsible for keeping the balance. So we wanted to invite an expert on this particular topic to the table to bring this information forth. And it would be, it wouldn't be befitting to the conversation if we didn't bring forth the foremost expert that we have access to at this particular time, and that's our brother, Dr. Umar Shabazz Bey. Yes, another one of the Umar giants. Okay, so Dr. Umar Shabazz Bey, who is the author of We Are the Wichita, will bring forth some information, some very vital information on this particular topic tonight. So, again, class is in session. You are now rocking with the best. This is KTL University. Get your pad and your pens ready because we are about to take it into hyperdrive. With no further ado, I want to bring in my co-host, Brother Red Pill. Peace.
Peace to the God. Peace to the universe. Can you hear me clear? Said you can.
Yes, indeed. Yes,
sir.
Indeed. Yes, indeed, I can.
All right. Welcome to KTL. KTL and the ATL. You already know what it is. Peace to the family. Peace to the universe. You know what I'm saying? I want to give mad thanks. I want to give a shout out to everybody that joined us on Tuesday. You know what I'm saying? Y'all came out in monumental numbers to hear Dr. Yaffa Bey, Dr. Taj Tariq Bey lay it down. You know what I mean? Y'all definitely came through with some interesting questions. You know what I'm saying? The feedback was incredible, and I want to give y'all thanks for that, for making that a great experience, especially being our inaugural show on, you know, for this, what I call Blackamoor History Month. You know what I'm saying? We want to make sure for this whole month that we continue to bring forth information that the family may have never heard, and they can spread with family, friends, and loved ones to help break the spells and wake them up. You know what I'm saying? So with that being said, also, I want to give a crazy, super-duper Morris shout-out to El Amir, the Sultan of the Marrakesh Empire. You know what I'm saying, who basically just came back on the scene. They had my brother kidnapped. But like I said on the show, when I came on their show last night, this is the law correspondence. So when you seen the brothers, the Muslim Brotherhood and other people walking out of the from bondage, from being kidnapped over there in Kemet, the law correspondence says whatever happens on the grid, you know what I'm saying? When you study geodetics, you'll understand that everything is lined up on the grid. So the law correspondent means whatever happens over there begins to happen over here. That's how you get the 100 monkey theory. So they opened up the gates, and my brother, you know what I'm saying, one of the integral parts of forming this Voltron thing, walked out of there a free man, and he's not playing. He's coming back. He's swinging his scimitar. His mind is sharp, and this thing is about to rock. It's about to take off to places where it's never been before. You know what I'm saying? The Moorish paradigm is real. Like I said, we will never stop banging the drums, and if you pay attention, and if you've been studying, and you look around the world, you know what I'm talking about, all right? It's going down. A mentor, not basement, a mentor. Peace. Indeed, also, indeed. I want to give a shout out to the Shaman. You know what I'm saying? I want to give a shout out to Yazoo. We're going to have some of the other family, the ATL, KTL family, come through tonight and build with the elder as he comes through with this pertinent information about the pyramids in America and Mexum.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I also want to inform the ATL family that the Super Hey Rules will be rocking out live tomorrow at the Apache. You know what I'm saying? Bringing our show to the Apache. Ghetto Shaman Royal Immortal presents the Super Hey Rules. That's tomorrow's Apache, located on 63rd Street, Northwest Atlanta, Georgia, 30308. You know what I'm saying? If you got to put in the GPS or what have you. But we will be live and direct in the building, bringing this energy to the south, right on the 33-degree parallel, doing what we do best. You know what I'm saying? So we welcome the family to come out and join us. I believe we should be doing our thing around 10, 11 o'clock. You know, if we can have it our way directly at 11, 11, we'll be touching the stage, you know what I'm saying, and shaking the grid up. So if the family is down here, you know, make it your business to join us, and we're going to be doing our thing. All right? Hello? Yeah. Hold on 1 second. All right, hold on 1 second, Finn. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. I was saying that can you let the family know about the Monday class, the Morris class that we will be conducting on Monday, being guest speakers at the class? I don't know the exact address. I'm not sure if you know it.
Oh, no, the address, top of yeah, but we'll get it before the show is out. We're also doing a class in the Morris class, the Morris National class that they hold in Atlanta, the Monday night class, to be specific. We'll be doing a presentation down here in the ATL as well, so the family could join us to get some information. You know what I mean? We're going to be going in Monday night, building on ancient Morris history, Morris Spain, I believe, you know what I mean, and bringing it up to the modern day. So if the family is able, willing and able to join us for that particular dissertation tonight, please do, all right? And like I said, we'll have the address and everything available for the family to be able to.
Yep. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay, okay. Your phone was going down.
With no further ado, you know, I don't see the need to hold us off any longer. This information has held back long enough, you know what I mean? I think that this show coincides and connects directly with a show that was held earlier.
Yeah, big up that show.
Yeah, and Pooh Astrology had brother Dr. Mitchell Gibson on speaking about the spirit world. You know what I mean? Which is a very vital conversation to be having.
Hold on. Peace.
Is the family hearing an echo or something on my phone?
I don't hear one.
Nah, okay. All right, hold on 1 second. Yeah, pardon me, family. So that particular show is talking about a legacy of spirits that still are here in this particular landmass because they're unsettled spirits. And he identified, you know, coming into contact with a lot of spirits that are still here from times of slavery that haven't ventured on into the spirit world. They're still here on the third dimensional plane interfering, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of that can be accounted for a lot of the quote unquote negative aspects that we see in society, because, you know, they're unsettled spirits and they're trying to get retribution and redemption from something that's not going to be redeemed on this particular plane. I think that the same can be said for the indigenous inhabitants of this hand, of this particular land that was slaughtered as well. You know what I mean? And I'm not only talking about what we know and identify as, quote unquote, the Native American slaughter that took place here. There are civilizations that existed way before that, and those particular accounts are still unsettled as well. So, like I said, I do want to open the line so we could delve directly into this particular topic and get some answers. So with no further ado, caller calling from 310-916. Peace. Peace.
Can you hear me?
Peace. Yes, indeed.
I'm here to ask a question. This is Umarsha Baz Bay. So if you have questions concerning the indigenous people, pyramids of America, we are the Ouachita, any issue, I was invited on. I'm honored to be here. So without any further ado, let's begin the discourse.
Absolutely, indeed.
Do you have a particular question you want to ask to start with?
Oh, yeah, we're going to be getting into some questions. You know, I'd rather begin by starting our conversation up, and then we could just jump right into the questions, you know, as we converse.
Yes, sir, I will follow your lead.
Okay. Now let's take, for instance, you know, what's going on in the news lines at this particular time. You know, we see a lot of turmoil taking place in Northeast Africa, you know, by way of Kemet, by way of Egypt. And a lot of people are unsettled by what they're seeing over there because it involves their quote-unquote ancestry, you know what I'm saying? It involves relics that they have attached themselves emotionally to, such as mummies, such as artifacts, such as the pyramids and what have you. You know, and we do understand that emotional attachment. You know, what the family does not understand or pretty much acknowledge at this particular time is the ancestral evidence of their existence in this landmass as well. So being that you're a foremost expert on that, I wanted you to delve into some of that untold history of the peoples that occupied this particular landmass, the evidence for such, and, you know, that particular connection as well.
Okay. We can begin with current affairs in the Nile Valley. The area we know is Egypt, Kemet, pick a name, but we're talking about the Nile Valley, the river of the god Hapi. And we're looking at events now of a political overthrow. And, of course, you have outside forces trying to distort the reality of what's going on. You have our young people and poor people fed up with being exploited by forces in higher places. And you also have outside forces, other political forces, other countries who are in there with an economic interest in the region. Basically, it's called the Suez Canal, and that's the access to from the Mediterranean Sea to the Red Sea, which is the whole Middle East issue, is making sure that the Western European forces have access to that Suez Canal. So understand you're dealing with an economic and political situation as well as a lot of people's lives. And then you go into the historical ancient aspect that the people of Amexum, which is called America now, and the people of the Nile Valley are the same people in terms of civilization and development of civilization. The same time you had construction of pyramids not only in Upper Egypt or Lower Egypt, which is where Cairo is and Alexandria is, you had evidence of pyramids and mounds being built all along the Nile River, 4,100 miles down to Lake Matamutapa, Lake Victoria, to Moo. That is Moo. So you understand that the people of the Ouachita, Moo, as we call the whole planet, and the people of what we call Amexum, or we Amexum here in Mexico, we call Akibolan, or Timet, Tameri, Africa, Afrique. Pick a name. You have all these different languages, but we're talking about a place, and their place is one. The people of what you call the Mississippi, or Mississippi, or the father of all rivers, the Mississippi River, our people here and the people of Nile Valley are one. The people of the Ouachita, part of our lore talks about going not only to Egypt, but down into Cush and Abyssinia and to Punt. So Punt is over in, is in Somalia, in Ethiopia area, Cush. So the people here in this land and the people on the land we call Africa are one people. As a matter of fact, the people in Australia, the people in South America, even the people in Europe, because when you talk about true ancient history, there is no beginning of time for Moors. The Moors have always been here because we're talking about pure people, the original people, the people of Mu, because you must go to the root of the word Mu and Moor and understand that everything is born out of that today. You can find, when you speak of anything done with nature, mother, nurturing, the god Mut, the word mother comes from the god Mut. If you go into the region around Lake Matamutapa, Mount Kilimanjaro, where they find, where the European and Western historians say they have found the oldest skeletons or remains of human beings, and you still find that place is Mu. Anyone can go do any research. I studied along with the Empress and several other ancients, and I was trying to grasp Mu because I so long understood Mu to be Lemuria and the sunken island out in the ocean with Atlantis. And when you go and understand the empirical, pure, observable fact that Mu is simply matter, or anything made from matter, human beings, we are part of the earth. So you say I'm a Moor, you're saying I'm of the earth, I'm of the ground, I'm of the mother, the Mu, okay? So you go and study the ancient languages, and you see that the ancient language in the Nile Valley around Matamutapa, the time of Gilgamesh, and what the Europeans say was the first human being. You find they called themselves Mutu, or Muntu, M-U-T-U was the name. And even now in the most ancient of languages from the continent, we say African languages or Ethiopic languages, you'll find that M-U was always a prefix for a human being, Mu. And today, when we were the United Nations, years ago, when they put out the pamphlet listing everybody's name in there, everybody had M-R or M-R-S in front of their name. Because even today, Moore is still the proper surname for any noble, self-respecting person, M-R. They just call it Mr., Monsieur, and it just runs all through the language and all through the culture. So the people of the Nile Valley today who occupy Cairo, who control Cairo, are not even descendants of the original people of Kemet. We all know, any true student of our history knows, that the Hyksos were one of the first people to come in. Any student of Dr. Ben, Osho Kwesi, Sheikh Anta Diop, there are so many scholars, and I myself am nothing more than a student of these scholars who some people have studied. You want to understand what's going on, go study Sheikh Anta Diop's Black Africa. You know, go study Amos Wilson's book on the blueprint for Black Power, and understand that they're simply giving us the government that was handed down for years, that government of one love, amen, you know, a love that comes into love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice today, and the manifestation of justice through love. So as we go forward and we talk about gathering tools and resources, we have got to change the paradigm, in not only in Egypt, because you see guns and bullets and fighting is a temporary transmutation, a distortion. What you need to have instead of guns and bullets is some paper, some tools, some concrete, some steel, and all that energy, effort, and resource we put into something constructive rather than destructive. But the forces that are disappearing from the world now, they rely on that negative energy and destruction to be profitable. And once we turn it where we constructive activity, that unity, that harmony, you know, the Prophet Noble Ali had the symbol for unity on the first ID card, national ID card for the Moorish Science Temple. And I had one of those cards. I always saw that unity on there, and I always wondered why we failed to practice that very basic tenet that the Prophet taught. So the people in Egypt, what they call today, the Greek word Egypt for Kemet, the land of the black people, and the people of Ouachita. And Ouachita is a land. When you say Ouachita Moor, you're talking about a land. You say, when I say we are the Ouachita, we are the people of the land, Ouachita. Nationality is really rooted in land, in a place, not a color, not a religion. It's rooted in someone's place of birth, your indigenous right. When you say you are from Mu, what soil are you from? You from the soil around the Nile Valley, around Fez in Morocco, near Carthage in Tunisia, where we had the first rising was actually in Carthage, Hannibal's home. So don't forget that these are young people. The majority of people in these communities are young. The elders, I don't know what happened to them, but you talk about 60% of the population is under the age of 24. That is children fed up with nonsense and exploitation. Dr. Leonard Jeffrey talks about the Iceman, you know, individualism, keep you divided and fighting, competition, and allows them to exploit you. That ICE, individualism, competition, exploitation are oxymoron when it comes to talking about being truly a Moor, or when you really go deep into it, a black man. I mean, Elijah Muhammad, I know Moors do not like to be called black, and I understand that because that's not our nationality. But that is a global culture. When I go to the Fiji Islands and Tonga, I'm seeing black people. In Louisiana, in Africa, I've been all over the world. I have lived on the Nile Valley. I've been over there several times. I was in the Nile Valley with Dr. Ben. I was at Dr. Ben's papyrus factory in Cairo, and I still have papyrus that I bought in his factory and made in his factory. It hangs in my museum now. I was down with Oscar Kwesi. Oscar Kwesi was the best man at one of my weddings in Luxor Temple, right there in Luxor, and Dr. Ben. So I have been in the Nile Valley. I've passed the point of principle, and I'm telling you right now that unity is all we should be discussing. Unity in terms of some economic activity where we learn to trust each other and practice love, truth, peace, freedom, and justice. That's all. So the gentleman, Cornel West, who I've not been a fan of, but I never say anything negative about my elders, my brothers and sisters, but he made a very, very eloquent statement when he said that a public display of unconditional love, it's called justice. Unconditional love in a public display between people in the world is called justice. We should strive for unconditional love, learn to love and not hate. That's what we've been taught all along. Now we need to apply it. And that's what we are looking for in terms of going forward from this point. If we allow for this, because you're talking about what's going on over there, and I haven't seen the news in 2 days. I heard someone told me the Lakers lost the game. I was like, wow, it's not June yet. I don't have time because I'm so into right now into finishing up these. We're making some documentaries right now, and it's very exciting. We're about to come on the road, and we have this very dynamic multimedia presentation we're doing, and we're just teaching. You know, the elders had to admonish us because we were putting together information in response to a bunch of negativity that is really an insult to our people as a nation and to individuals. And instead of being reactive, we're going to remain noble, and we're going to just continue to teach. Because as you understand, in spite of people's disregard for our rights as indigenous people and lack of respect for our Declaration of Human Rights, it is still an instrument that we need to continue to apply and practice. And everyone should actually go and read the UN recognized Declaration of Rights for Indigenous People, because beyond the civil struggles we deal with UCC and other civil codes, the human rights issue is what I've always focused on, because that's what Malcolm gave me. You know, and as a student and a child of the tribe of Shabazz, we all know that human rights will ultimately empower us internationally to go out and be able to gain the respect and opportunity to do business with people from other nations. And so we've had the success in the past. We know what it takes to achieve it again, and now it's a matter of time. And what we need, first and foremost, is to practice some peace and love and unite. Now, do you have any other questions, brother?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. I want you to also, you know, just give people a little background history on the Louisiana territories, the purchase, you know, the history that's centered around that particular landmass, because I don't want to guess that my listeners know exactly what we're talking about. Even when we mention the Empress, I want you to be very specific, you know what I'm saying, and explain
okay.
to the people exactly what it is you're talking about.
Yes, sir. Okay, very good. But that would actually take years, and we only have a short amount of time here, so I will focus on the Louisiana Purchase, as people have heard that term, which is really a fictional term, because the actual document is it's not titled that. But irrespective, it's just the contract between the Republic of France and the United States, North United States, to purchase port rights and actually the streets of New Orleans and the military barracks, the Jackson Barracks down there. So the actual purchase consisted of the actual streets of New Orleans, downtown New Orleans, Mardi Gras, Canal Street, Bourbon Street area down there. And there's some Jackson Barracks that are off to the just to the east of downtown New Orleans. And you can see that if you took a boat ride on along the Mississippi River from downtown New Orleans to Jackson Barracks. And that was actually the land that was being purchased during Louisiana Purchase, because the whole objective was, if you've read the Empress's book, Return of the Ancient One, she teaches how, and everyone else teaches how, the United States had colonies along the Mississippi River, Missouri, Tennessee, Arkansas, Mississippi, who had to get their products to port through the city of New Orleans, which was held by France and Spain since the first Europeans got here. The first Europeans in Louisiana were the French and the Spanish, and those two nations traded Louisiana back and forth like during the game of dominoes or cards. So you'll find that Louisiana went back and forth from some royal person in France to some royal person in Spain continuously throughout the period before, during, and after the American Revolution. So Louisiana, it stands for King Louis and Queen Anna, Louis and Anna, Louisiana, is an area that now is in the public eye, and that the state of Louisiana now has embraced the idea of the ancient mounds in being here and being old, because they should, and what's more, it is to their advantage. I've been working quietly with different people in offices of archaeology, in schools of archaeology, and other kind of areas, and they now embrace it. They just have a fear, and the fear is the same fear that ignites all the negativity on the internet. It's an anti-African, anti-black fear and hatred. It has people just doing all kind of evil things and saying all kind of defaming things, but it doesn't matter to us because we've dealt with all our lives, because at this point, they're powerless in terms of being able to physically stop us from achieving our goals once we set course. So as we go forth and we look for the tools and resources, we don't really need to get any more ammo. We need to actually get some tools and go to work, because the struggle now is within. You know, the demons we need to fight with are, as Noel Jolie wrote in Chapter 3, the Unity of Life, you know, the devil is always from within. The evil we need to fight is within us first and foremost. Once we slay the devil within us, there's no one outside who can touch us. and we go forward strong and confident with faith and be very clear. The problem, we lack unity because we have no common vision and common love and trust of each other. Get the vision together, something people can agree on, not just one vision, several visions in several areas, in health, education, you name it. We need all these social institutions to be constructed and established. So Louisiana Purchase, which I always DVL, of course, Louisiana Purchase is significant in that Louisiana Purchase talked about in it honoring the rights of those nations and peoples, not just Native American people, not just so-called Indians, but also the ancient ones, and even the Frenchmen and Spanish people who had received land grants. So there were other people beyond the city of New Orleans and the land that actually sought after and purchased the Louisiana Purchase. They didn't buy anything beyond the downtown New Orleans and the public lands around it. Anyone knows that less than 100 miles away, the state capital of Baton Rouge was not part of Louisiana Purchase. In fact, the United States only got it by military force and taking it from the Spanish who were still here. So anyone who really goes and studies the matter understands Louisiana Purchase has always been just a romantic fantasy. So many parts of history are romantic fantasy, like the Paul Revere ride is romantic fantasy. But it doesn't matter because it's entertaining and it gets the children's attention. It's a fairy tale and a fable. And some people have taken these fables to be literal. So there are fables about the Louisiana Purchase, fables about black women in Louisiana being having special powers. And that whole concept of these black women in Louisiana having special powers has been turned into something negative, voodoo or witchcraft. Not understanding there's a spiritual, divine, positive aspect of divine obedience. The Empress was an example of a woman who was absolutely obedient to her creator, and her creator had no image. It was just a energy that pushed her and moved her and lifted her. When she couldn't do it herself, someone would be able to lift her. And that whole concept of Louisiana women still scares people because that's very real, even today. Anybody from Louisiana, you know that our women are very special. And you know that all around the country, women from Louisiana are truly have the spice. They're the melanated women, understand? When you talk about people of color, black, brown, red, green, blue, high yellow, red bone, blue, black, pick the color you want to, it's all about melanin. If you understand the true scientific, biological, superconductive power of melanin, you understand why fear reigns upon people who do not possess melanin and possess the God-given gifts that come along with being melanated. So that the ignorance and the fear that is bred out of a sense of inferiority has forced people to create the illusion of superiority, and the whole concept of superiority is actually immoral. It's unscientific because the color of your skin has no bearing. I mean, you know, I was taught by an elder recently, Brother Manu, over in the Northeast. He told me, Brother, there are only two kind of people on the planet, two kind of people, and that is male and female, not necessarily man and woman, but male and female are the only kind of two people on the planet, humans. And of those two, you break them down to only one more subdivision, which is you have good men and good women, bad men and bad women. So all the colors, the races, we are Asiatic. Yes, we are Moors. Yes, I am tall. Yes, all these physical attributes. Yes, my eyes are a certain color, my hair a certain color, you know, skin tone, the size of your cheekbones, the shape of your nose, all those things are characteristic traits that can tie you to tribal, family, generational connections. But ultimately, we are all bound by spiritual cords, not physical cords. And those spiritual cords supersede all physical essence. You know, a teaching Napoleon Hill talks about there being an intangible force greater than any physical force knowing the man. And when people understand how to tap into that intangible force, then they will be able to accomplish any goal. And people out here today are not tapping into that force. They have even lost that capacity to even feel it. They're numb to it. And it is truly a vibration. And the greatest law man should ever study is the law of vibration. Because once you master your own vibration and you control your positive and negative mind state and emotions, then you will truly be I, self, law, and master. That is truly the essence of Islam. I, self, law, and master. And that is when you are in the highest state. So we're looking to, as we move in a circle, you know, stand on a square, move in a circle. You move in a circle, but not on a plane. You're moving in the form of helix, DNA, and you're evolving. And every 360 degrees, you should be on a higher level on a plane. You find yourself on the same level year in and year out, day in and day out, then you need to add a dimension, a spiritual dimension, a growth that is going to allow you to be prepared to deal with what's coming very shortly, which is very simple, a point where you have to now take your own thoughts and bring them to life. And whether you control your thoughts or not, what you think is going to be your reality. So if you think 2012 is going to be a horrible end of the world, you made it yourself. And as we know in the Washita, it's the year of Jubilee already. We don't even have the fear. As we deal with our brothers and sisters who are truly God-fearing Christians and God-fearing Muslims and God-fearing Hebrews, and it's a beautiful thing because that reverence for our Creator is what is most needed to bring about faith and obedience. The Moors, the Washita, have always been a God-loving people. You know, we love our Creator, we love ourselves, we love our neighbor, and if you understand the law that what I want for myself, I want for everybody, then you understand the law of one love, the love for yourself, the love for your children you should have for everyone, and at that point, the world will correct itself.
Indeed.
That was a very poignant dissertation, you know what I'm saying? And you're vibrating on that particular, that plane, that spirit of love, and that's a beautiful thing. Now, the resolve of the area that we're talking about, you know, the brothers in Wichita and what have you, did the resolve get that much stronger? Because we've seen a lot of catastrophe in the last 5 to 6 years that has been centered around that particular region of the planet, i.e. Katrina and the Gulf of Mexico disaster. You know, what has that done in terms of bringing brothers and sisters together on that particular resolve?
Brother, if you look at the globe and look at New Orleans and the Gulf right there, you'll find it is on the exact same line of latitude as Cairo, where the eruption is going on. So, as the brother said earlier, what starts over here goes over there and back and forth. So, what the chaos that we saw here in New Orleans, it actually started long before Katrina. Katrina was bringing the world to understand that New Orleans, the indigenous population in this area, was suffering on probably the lowest level of all of communities in America of indigenous people. New Orleans, in the state of Louisiana, the area up near Poverty Point, what they call Lake Providence, is probably some of the poorest demographics of people in the nation, save some of our brothers and sisters on Indian reservations. So when you talk about New Orleans and Louisiana, you're talking about a land of the mound builders, the first mound builders. When we talk about the first French and Spanish who were here, they truly knew of the mound builders and the ancient ones, and they were well aware of the imperial family, including the empress. So you talk about the mound builders in Louisiana. Before they had the Louisiana Purchase, you had several contracts drafted by the King of Spain, land grants, going to let's say there were royalty out of Europe who came in and deliberately married into the royalty and nobility of the Ouachita. So one understands that we're talking about the so-called Louisiana Purchase. We're talking about an area that includes land that is legally owned outside of the jurisdictions and jurisprudence of the United States, but is now part and parcel of the United States. So that's just a reality that we as indigenous people understand, and it's not good, not bad. It's just a matter of how we deal with the situation. So it's upon us to unite and to come up with a plan and deal with it intelligently, because as a result of the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People, there has been redress and opportunity created for us to have some redress, come together, get a statement, get an understanding, and we can go before state and federal governments and make proposals. The opportunity exists. So it's not a matter of arming up. It's a matter of becoming intelligent and preparing ourselves to take care of ourselves and develop self-sustainable communities. Even now, down here, we're building a community. We're working on different aspects to start with having really businesses that are profitable. We have to have enterprises that are naturally based and are profitable so that we can actually sustain ourselves and employ other people. And we'd also get engaged in trade. We are producers and manufacturers, and we are international exporters and shipping our product out of the country internationally.
That's right.
And engaging in international business.
Indeed.
So Louisiana Purchase, as we were told, is maybe we were taught, I was taught in school, Louisiana Purchase included the state of Louisiana, Texas, and everything over to Oregon and California, up into Canada, and that's what they claim. And if you understand that the Ouachita in Louisiana, the Ouachita is all of the water drained by the Mississippi River. If one were to look at the Mississippi River that comes in at the toe of Louisiana, all that is Ouachita land. That's Ouachita land from the tip of the Gulf of Mexico, Barataria Bay. The first French and Spanish will tell you the first people they met were boat people called Ouachita people, spelled W-A-S-H-A. It's in the book, We Are the Ouachita. The actual documentation from the Lewis and Clark expedition, it was in the National Archives in Washington, D.C. The Empress pulled it out, made a copy, and we shared it with people for years. So the first people the French reported to the Americans they met were the Ouachita people, and we were always friendly there. And we've retained that positive peace and love vibration. So, and you go into with the Empress and the Imperial family, the Ouachita Valley. You go to where the biggest city in what today they call Ouachita Parish, Louisiana. That city is part of an area that is sacred ground. If you got a map from the Library of Congress I was privileged to see and copy and publish myself, you will clearly see in so-called Louisiana, at that time it was called Arkansas, Mississippi, on the map. The area was vague. There were no borders. But on the map you'll see the location of the map along the Ouachita River, spelled in various different ways, at the same time called the Rio Negro or the Black River, in the Ouachita River simultaneously, you will find there evidence of one of the most ancient mound building communities in North America. They call Watson's Break, just south of the city of Monroe. And within the present city, but today's city of Monroe, you have a university, University of Louisiana Monroe, along Bayou de Sid. And you will find that the ancient mound builders in that exact area, location, and all around for hundreds of miles, all the way over to the Mississippi River, the whole delta between the Ouachita River and the Dugdamonia River, the Dugdamonda River and the Ouachita River are ancient rivers. So when I hear these anti-black Eurocentric haters attack, I laugh because when they question the origin of Dugdamonia, they want to laugh at Dugdamonia. They fail to realize that Doug and Mound are indigenous words. If they try to say that Dugdamonia, and they try to laugh at us and say, where are they kidding? Where they get Dugdamonia from? And they try to define Dugdamonia as bad English. They fail to realize that Mound is not an English word, and if they had looked into any English dictionary, its origin would clearly state origin unknown, because it's an indigenous word that we gave to them after they came over here. If you go to look in the English dictionary, the word for Mound would be a word like bottle or carn. But if you are just an ignorant clown trying to defame people and assume that they are ignorant and cannot defend themselves, then you yourself may be embarrassed to find the truth is a lot more powerful than your fiction. So you go and look up the word Mound. Mound is an indigenous word. Go look up the word Tejas or Tedas, Texas. That also means friend. So the word Texas is an indigenous word. It comes from the indigenous word Tedas. So many of our words are part of their language. Even Ouachita. I mean, it's amazing how they were so fortunate to get a president named Washington. And you go back and look in the Encyclopedia Britannica and look for Washington, and it will tell you that was not his name in England. I'm not sure there are many Washingtons coming from England. So George Washington, bless his soul, the great mason he was, the great builder he was, as we were taught, bless his soul, his name should be researched more. Because with the Emperor's research, I saw in an encyclopedia where it said George Washington's family's home in England was not Washington, but the name at some point was later changed after Washington's activity in the New World. So we should explore all these things. So all of these attacks upon our dignity as a people, you know, the attempt to belittle us, it doesn't matter because the truth is being revealed. This is the age of enlightenment. Truly it is. It's been for quite some time. And as people try to react to their concerns about 2012 coming, they need to know that it's totally up to them. It's all an illusion. You know, so we took the book Pyramids in America and wrote it with a very specific objective. First, to teach people that there's a culture, and the question is always culture, that the culture of people that existed since the beginning of time. You can't even say before the Indians or before the Europeans, because since the beginning of time, there have been people here on this land. If one were to look at the Nile Valley and look at the continent of Africa where first civilization appeared, we all would look at that continent with no geopolitical lines, see the Nile Valley, and we would know that life started over there by the Nile Valley. If you were to look at the continent of Amexum or North America, and you go look at it, you'll see the Mississippi River and the Ouachita River right there. So if one were to look at this continent, it would be very obvious for anyone. Natural law would say, okay, civilization probably started at the mouth of the Mississippi River. Now, who was there? And go look at the maps they have of New Orleans and Louisiana. Go look at a map of the Mississippi River. And the first, this is so beautiful, the first major tributary is a mound that's in our book, a mound site near Marksville. And the first major tributary is what? The Ouachita River, or the Black River, along with what? The Ouachita River, or the Red River. So from the Mississippi River, the first tributary is the Ouachita River. And from the Gulf of Mexico up through the Ouachita River, the Arkansas River, Tennessee River, Missouri River, Illinois River, Ohio River, all those river valleys up into Iowa, Minnesota, Wisconsin, all of those regions are covered with the evidence of mound builders that has never been discussed in everyday classrooms in America. Our children are taught about Indians. I learned about Indians watching John Wayne movies. Okay? That's, we were taught about Hollywood. We were not only taught, we were given images, you know, of what an Indian looked like. And we're still, our brains are still stained with that image. And I myself am only maturing through my evolution of my identity. I had to go, I and so many other people, we go through identity crises because it's confusing. I mean, it's only pathological and predictable because we're dealing with distortions and lies. But the good thing is we can move from all the negative mindset at any given moment, make a choice, and focus on personal growth and positive, affirming thoughts. Once you get your mind to where positive thoughts dominate your thinking, you will muscle out the negative thoughts. And if those positive thoughts are well scripted and you are in control and you have other people working with you in harmony to achieve these thoughts that you have scripted out, now you are truly living the life of the ancient ones. The ancient ones didn't have time for drama. All they could do was take care of business. And you understand the same ancient tenets, the 42 confessions of Maat, you will find in Native American lore, they focus on being a noble and honorable person. So in the Washita, the ancient civilizations here, the ancient mound builders, the ancient pyramid builders, were people of nobility, noble sons, and with matriarchal societies here, where there was respect for men, women, and children, and for the nature. And you get back to just basically being Moors. So the indigenous people of this land, North America, the pyramid builders here, and understand, I must explain this also, and when we get to Atlanta, we're going to discuss this more. I once was told to watch an attack of one of our presentations, and let me explain this. A few years ago, I recorded one of our lectures and put it on DVD, and we included also a documentary done by the Southern University, the Department of Mass Communications on the mound builders in Ouachita, and we put it into a DVD, and people got copies of it, and it has now gone viral on YouTube, but people are taking that video and cutting it up out of context and mixing it with other stuff and creating their own definition of the world, which is just beautiful and it's entertaining, but it's also dangerous when you start to violate people's human rights, cultural rights, political rights, you know, defaming character. Those are very dangerous weapons to use. But thankfully, the Moors, we are far above that type of activity, and the elders always admonish us not to retaliate and react, but to continue to build and be creative in teaching everyone, our culture, through our not only our words, but through our daily demonstration. So Moors love to demonstrate. Let us begin to demonstrate by our daily, everyday actions the attributes of what it is to be truly loving, truthful, peaceful, free, and righteous, and just. Okay?
Indeed, brother. Give thanks. We honor our guests normally that, you know, drop bombs. We honor them by dropping bombs. So with no further ado, thanks, definitely. You are weaving, using the information to weave a tale or a story for that matter that pretty much is helping, especially a lot of the people that are in the chat, is helping weave, you know, a story that is solidified. You know, it's making a lot of sense and filling in a lot of blanks. You know, me, myself, personally, we have been taking a lot of trips to the mounds. One area in particular, the Ohio Valley region, you know, has for me unearthed a wealth of information in terms of not only what was done in that particular area, but a lot of the artifacts that were discovered in that particular area, specifically dealing with the giants,
of that particular area, and them identifying the continental United States as a chakra system grid point. And, you know, a lot of attention was focused on some pyramids up in Wisconsin that they're talking about. And I purchased your map from the Brother Biku. I want to give a shout out to Brother Biku for also helping making this possible. Wonderful brother. And there are a lot of unspoken of pyramids and mounds strewn all about the continental United States. From your knowledge, was there any particular pattern that was used or followed? And are the mounds and the pyramids telling a story via the grid? And more so, I want you to touch on what is the importance of building mounds.
Okay, brother. Yes, sir, brother. I'm glad you mentioned Brother Baku, because Brother Baku has been instrumental in doing so much for the community worldwide with the Harlem Rising Radio and his work with the Messing Technologies. That brother is truly making an impression on the world, and his story's yet to be told. So if you know Brother Baku, go get a brother a pat on the back, and anyway, whatever he's doing, help him out, because he's really on point, you know. And I'll talk about the pyramids and the significance of those pyramids, brother. And it just, do you understand what a pyramid is? A pyramid, just by that word pyro, you know, pyro, standing for fire or heat, pyro. So in mid, a mid meaning in the center. So a pyramid is not necessarily a rectangular building. A pyramid is something with fire in the middle. Fire, a pyramid. So you look at a pyramid of the building and structure, it is actually fire in the middle. Anyone who understands pyramid power, pyramid energy, there's so many books out about pyramid power from time immemorial, and it's very true, because based on the actual structure, how you use pi and phi in the dimensions, in the ratios and proportions of the construction of a pyramid, there is energy and undisputable power in the pyramid shape. And you talk about ancient mounds, these altars of earth. Those mounds were pyramids, and in the center of those mounds, they were actually generated. Those are batteries. Right now, if you've got an antenna called a pyramid antenna. A pyramid antenna is an antenna that actually can take wild lightning and harness it and reduce it to an AC electricity that can be harnessed and used. So there's something called etheric energy, and you can use a pyramid antenna to actually capture etheric energy. So those mounds are all types of machines, not only the individual earthen mounds. In every mound is a pyramid by definition, because inside that mound of earth, there's heat inside. It's a pyramid. There's fire in the middle of the serpent mound. And at the head of the serpent mound in Ohio, you will find that the head was once full of white stones. There was an altar there that would actually burn something. And it's amazing how you see, here's an altar earth, a pyramid. And you have in all the books, in the Torah, if you're a Hebrew Israelite, or in the Quran, or in the Bible, you have in the book of Exodus the admonishment from the Creator in the Ten Commandments saying, do not make images or gods of gold or silver, only build an altar of earth unto God. And it's amazing how people come to me and I show them, just go to Exodus, look at the Ten Commandments, you will see in there, in anybody's book, the statement from the Creator saying to build altars of earth. So these pyramids you see are altars in most cases, in the most ancient sense, in the biblical sense, in the Judeo-Christian Islamic sense, they are altars of earth. But all these altars of earth have fire in the middle. If I rake my yard and stack all the grass up and come back in a couple of days, there'll be smoke in the middle. In my compost heap, when I stack it up, when I use the defective microorganisms, it begins to make heat inside, and you have to turn over, or it would catch fire via wood chips in your compost. So that pile of earth is fire. when you understand archaeologists go and dig into the mounds, and they always say they found structures underneath the mound. You talk about Watson's Break. You talk about a place called Monte Sagno, places dated more than 6,000 years old. They're in the book Pyramids in America. I'll give you the location of some sites that are dated over 6,000 years old, which is a significant number, understanding biblical history, in that Adam and Eve were roughly 6,000 years old. You talk about anybody beyond that age, you're talking about pre-Adam and Eve biblical beings, and it becomes very, very challenging for some people to even grasp that. They have to leave the room and turn off the TV, because the concept that somebody lived before Adam and Eve is frightening to some people. And they must understand that you go study more, Dr. Ben, Dr. John Henry Clark, all these scholars have addressed these matters, and it's not anything to frighten people away. It's simply to enlighten you, open your eyes, and really to bring you that freedom in there. That's freedom comes with that. You get peace of mind and freedom, because it becomes truth revealed, and you can handle it. It's like medicine, and it heals you, and our people need to be healed with truth. So these pyramids are instruments of biocosmic energy. The pyramids can heal. In my house, where I am now, in my office, I have pyramids hanging from the ceiling, because pyramids actually produce a certain power. And to be quite honest with you, if you go around America, you go outside tomorrow, look around you, see how many roofs are shaped like pyramids. Think about that. You go out for the rest of your life, look around buildings, see how many pyramids you see. Go into a graveyard, be it of Negroes or anybody else, go into a graveyard and see how many pyramids and obelisks you'll see. You understand that the pyramids are a universal force, and that the original people in the Mississippi Valley and the original people in the Nile Valley built ancient altars of earth along the Atbar River coming out of Ethiopia. There were ancient altars of earth along that river from the Garden of Eden, the Blue Nile and the White Nile coming up out of sub-Saharan Africa. You had altars of earth down in Uganda, and in Zimbabwe, you know, in Kenya. If you want to go down to Kenya and study, just find the letter M-U, Mu, and see how many cities, how many rivers, how many places are called Mu. You will see, understand that the original people, the original name of the planet was Mu, and the original people are Moors. And that has been taken and been translated, and it's become part of a very ambiguous language where people are hypersensitive, and we have to learn that we need to call people by the name they choose to be called. I mean, that's something that Dr. Francis Cuswelding taught. Call people by the name they choose to be called. And in the many articles of the Declaration of Human Rights for Indigenous People, it calls, one of the very clear articles, it says, all people have the right to a nationality. And one of the solutions for unity in America for people of color, if you are a Moor or a Negro or an African American or color, whatever term you have for your ethnicity, understand they're irrelevant. If you are a Chicano or Latino or Hispanic, we need not deal with the differences. Let's find the harmonies in life and work with them. And so down here in the Washington, that's what we're doing. We're building a community. We're raising $10 million. We've already raised over $1 million. We're going to develop a community down here, a wellness community, so elders can come out here and rest. I know Brother Baker has been working with Dr. Ben and his family, going and helping fix his wheelchair. So thank Brother Baker for going there and taking care of our elders, because without people like Dr. Ben, we would not be where we are today. You know, we thank Brother Oscar Quaid for carrying on the work of Dr. Joseph Ben Yakinen and other scholars out there who go out there and teach, Brother Renoko Rashidi out there doing this thing. So we got all these scholars out here, and we need to respect them, and we need to understand that they need to be supported, and we need to take the time, not just during Black History Month, but every day, to make it possible for their word to be heard and have the young people understand and get exposed to that. And down here in the Washita, you know, the Empress taught us, the Empress of Washita, her Majesty, taught us to build our own schools. And anybody who worked the Empress, whenever you came around the Empress, you always had schools and classes set up. Even in Atlanta, while she was in the Washington, she had classes in the Atlanta area set up. Sister Bonnie, Brother Saluki, and other people actually had Washington classes, and we graduated classes every year. We'd come from Atlanta to the Washington and receive their certificates and diplomas and degrees through ceremonies in the June Juneteenth. So that's been going on for years, and even today we still carry it on. We have class now here at the Moore Institute, and we just carry on the tradition of creating our own institutions to solve our problems. And now we're building a factory to build our own solar power and alternative energy projects. But Brother Abeku and I did a project. So you talk about Moore Science today. Moore Science today is Brother Abeku coming down to the Washita, going to get an old junk van from behind the high school and putting our hands inside of it. And we took a van that got 8 miles per hour and got to get over 22 miles per hour by applying our own retrofitted hydrogen fuel electrolyzer that Brother Abeku built from mason jars that we normally use to make honey. Brother Abeku came to the Washita, took some jars from our honey collection, had a piece of my daughter's plastic toy, and created an electrolyzer with some screws and nuts. We were able to attach it to a car, produce hydrogen, and increase the mileage of the vehicle. So that's the kind of technology we're going to advance and develop and turn it into another enterprise. And people may not understand what that means, but we do. And we have the resources now, and we have the brain power. And we need now for more people to understand that that's where we need to focus on that kind of science, economic and technology and training. And we are going to create institutions to empower our people where you don't have time to worry about what color you are, you know, or what color your eyes are. You're going to be so focused on achieving some goal, some objective, that won't really matter. And you'll be able to work with people of all races, because you will find it in the Washita that Washita is not a race. There are people of every race in the Washita, from blue black to redneck. There are Asian Washitas, there are Hispanic Washitas. The Moors are global people. So to hear someone say that Washita Moors are racist is so ridiculous, it's not even something someone should address. It's just a ridiculous comment to say that multiracial people are racist. No, but we need not worry about that. Let's move forward with positive planning, some focus, and some love and trust, and solve some problems. So go forward, and when I get to Atlanta, I will have some visuals for you, okay? On pyramids.
Indeed.
In America. Okay.
The
pyramid there.
What I wanted to ask you very briefly before you continue, have you read the book by the brother Horace Butler, When Rocks Cry Out?
Oh yes. Well, Horace Butler, he addresses the presence in Central and South America of the Moors.
Right.
Yeah.
Indeed. No, I'm just saying, you know, because my mind is going off, and I'm seeing a combination of both of your bodies of work, and that pretty much covers it all. You know what I'm saying? It pretty much leaves nothing left to question, and I strongly feel that this is the information that the children and their parents as well could benefit from. You know what I'm saying? This is the untold history of us in the Americas that is pretty much coming to the forefront right now that is redeeming. You know what I mean? It's pretty much getting people up off of their knees and they're able to remove the shackles once they can really, really understand their connection to this particular landmass and the wonderful historic history that is being held right in the earth of this landmass. You know what I'm saying? These mounds, many of them have been tampered with and ruined or what have you, but there's many that have been unmolested. You know what I mean? That the family needs to look into, you know, getting in contact, tapping into, you know what I'm saying? And mind you, I mean, there's certain ways that you address and approach a mound as well. So we also need to be mindful to tell the people that, you know what I mean? That there's certain ways that they need to approach these, you know, these ancestral artifacts, you know what I mean, or edifices for them to be received properly or for them to get the entire spiritual experience, you know what I mean? But
I'm sure that we'll be able to discuss that further when you come into Atlanta. What I did want to do, I want to go to the calls because we do have hands up. We have callers in the queue that want to ask questions. You know what I mean? So questions, comments, or concerns. If anyone else in the call queue has any questions, comments, or concerns, now would be the time to raise your hands. Before I do that, though, I do have about one or two questions that are coming from the chat room that I would like to ask you.
Okay, I'll keep it short and simple. Yes, I'll keep it short and simple. Yes, go ahead.
In your research, have you uncovered anything that is of interest dealing with the Mammoth Cave in Kentucky?
I haven't done anything specifically for the Mammoth Cave, but I do know that in the Chapel, Kentucky, there are over a dozen mound sites in that state of Kentucky.
There's
so much evidence, and then they call the DNR and the Hope Belt culture that's also identified with the Ohio River Valley region. But there are all kind of mound sites, indigenous cities, actual cultures, all through Kentucky, Tennessee, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Western Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. That whole area. If you understand, even over as far as Virginia, both Thomas Jefferson and George Washington excavated ancient mounds on their properties.
Indeed. Interesting. Now, when I saw the map brought up by the brother Biku, it reminded me of a map that I had seen a while back at a powwow. And this particular map was dealing with specific ancestral places in the continental United States that they were suggesting that people relocate in case of any natural disaster, incoming or upcoming disasters or what have you. It was somewhat like a 2012 map, you know what I'm saying? And they were showing how different parts of the continent supposedly are going to break up and where they would suggest that people go for refuge. Do you deal with that, any of that particular information? You're the Empress. In any of her maps, does she deal with that? Is there any ancestral sites that are suggested that the family might want to get nearer or relocate to in case of disaster?
Well, if you understand the history of the ancient ones down here in the Ouachita, and just based on the evidence that has been excavated by the Western scientists, they can say without a doubt that the people in the Ouachita River Valley area have been here consistently, continuous occupation for more than 6,000 years, undisturbed, peaceful existence, okay? And I understand that there's a lot of fear. For years with the Empress back in the 90s, we had people come through there who were trying to get above the 36th parallel, move to Idaho, Louisiana going to fall off in the water, California going to fall off in the water. A lot of fear. Of the world coming to an end, but they were caught up in a physical destruction. Now, the understanding there's going to be a spiritual destruction coming about, and all this evil is going to disappear. It's going to be, or more so, the positive will become more dominant over the evil. Right now in this world, it's very clear. Anybody can watch the news, and negativity and evil is dominating. So the concept of the world breaking up and the fear of the run and hide is not something of ancient people. Understand? It's just not of our culture. And I'm familiar with it. I've been hearing it since the 80s. I remember years ago in the 80s, I heard about all the stuff that people are only learning about now. The Illuminati, Rosicrucian, all these boogeymen, the one world government, all these things had me running crazy back in the 80s. That's when I was back in my 20s in college. I'm just getting scared crazy, so I was reacting to all this fear, and I was captured, and my creative state was blocked. I was creating nothing, I was producing nothing. I was in a state of defense, and I say the identity crisis: who am I? What am I gonna do? What's my out plan? Instead of what's my 20-year plan to build my own nation? I'm trying to just go to defense. So understand, if that's what you focus on, if you're afraid of it, then whether it happens or not in the real world, in your mind, it's going to happen. And there's nothing I can do to stop you. I can just tell you that you control your thoughts, and if you let other people's images dictate to you and dictate to your thoughts, then you are in trouble. And if you don't teach your children to take total control and discipline themselves, because the spirit of the universe is in them and they know right from wrong, if you teach your children to recognize that righteous voice of intuition called the Christ, the saving grace, Horu, Horus, that spirit of the Creator that's alive in you that always lets you stay safe, that is what people should focus on and not focus on all these boogeyman monster things, because all these external threats, so-called threats, most of them, 90% of the things people fear never come to pass. But their minds are so preoccupied with that kind of thing, they're not able to produce, and they wonder why at the end of the month they're broke, the money's short, but they've been allowing their time, energy, and resources to be distracted with things that never come to pass. Okay.
Granted, you know,
what you're saying right is right and exact in terms of the mental application of viewing the world and upcoming events. But even if we're talking about the formation of the Ouachita and its separation from its original landmass by way of the land shift of Pangaea, we have to know and understand that there are certain shifts, tectonic plates do shift, and those things are indicative at the end of ages. Scientifically speaking, you know what I'm saying? I know and understand that those things take place. Now, just saying, in case something like that were to take place for preparation purposes, you know what I mean? Is there anywhere that's suggested in a particular map that deals with, you know, protection?
Brother, a more true and faithful would never have that concern. I don't know how to say this to you other than to tell you that, you don't anticipate such negative things, but you know when you are working in proper order, when you know you're working in proper order with the universe, that when that comes up, you will be prepared for it, even today as we go forth. Every day for us, brother, it's a mystery. How are we going to just sustain and maintain? But if we hunker down and fear we're short of money, we don't have enough of this, and we don't stay focused on, well, we had a plan, and we're into it, and we stay focused on it because the way the plan was written 2 years ago, at this point, we should be covered. And if we're concerned about the world coming to an end, because we can't run and hide. There's no way you can run and hide. And there are a lot of people running from damnation, and they scramble, and they make decisions based on fear. And they have yet to sit, listen to me one time, sit down, gather their thoughts, and make a plan. So if the world, if you suspect that the world is going to possibly fall off or some parts are going to fall off, then you should prepare for that. You should go with people of like mind and prepare for that instance, because you're going to create it within your own. You understand that? Whether it's meant to be that way or not, because you are a creator. We all have that power. And what is happening is that other outside influences are dictating what our children think. So what they're creating is profiting someone else, because ultimately it's all about profit and maintaining control, and maintaining our people in an inferior position where we are unable to unite and produce. So if what you're concerned about causes you to take this defensive measure as a priority over the long-term plan you had in place with in terms of building, then I'll have you to examine that and say, well, who has activated this thing to distract me from the higher purpose the Creator had for me? Because God did not put you here, the Creator did not put you here to defend yourself. You're here to be made in the form of the Creator, which means you are Creator. You should be created. You should be operating on the creative plane, not a negative, defensive, competitive plane. That's back to the Iceman. Move to a state of harmony. So when you think about, okay, if the earth is going to crumble, if it is going to crumble, brother, if the world comes to an end, I cannot wait, because the earth will still be here. The world will come to an end. See, New Orleans flooded, but New Orleans is still there. The city is still there. The people are still there. The Ouachita is still there. If you go get a map of New Orleans, you're going to see Lake of the Ouachita is down there just south of the Mississippi River. The Ouachita River, just south of the Mississippi River, is still there. Been there for thousands of years. So, I mean, I understand. I mean, for years I've been listening to all kind of things about the money's going to crash, you know, the country's going to fall apart, all these things that have me just in a state of total fear, you know, the whole Y2K, 1999, buy water, food, computers are going to crash, 911, there's just fear and hate are destroying this country, and this new age is going to be an age where the fear and the hate are going to be taken out. They will not be dominant. So you talk about the coming age of 2012, to understand it's going to be the age of Jubilee. And the good, positive people will definitely have control of their own lives. We're going to control the whole world. We're going to have self-determination and control of our own lives. Well, if something happens, we don't have to react to it. We have power. We are empowered to not only save ourselves, but to help other people. So we're not only trying to just be running from damnation. We get in the position of superheroes. These are our children, ultimately, we're talking about. These are our children we're talking about. And it's time for us at some point. The Empress talked about the return of the ancient ones, her book, The Return of the Ancient Ones, and the mound builders. The mound builders are the peacemakers, literally. So we, true and faithful Moors, have to be just that, the peacemakers. This land needs us to bring peace to it. Our poor brother Obama, he needs us to demonstrate ourselves noble and strong as we say we are. We need to be and demonstrate that every day. And that calls for us to become very strong, very united, very productive. So I once again, I tell people, go back and read the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People. It's on my website under Indigenous People. The link on there, you can click on, or you can go to the UN, because I think it was actually accepted, you know. So I would say this. This is off on another caveat. I would say, one person questioned the validity of the Ouachita and the importance of the United Nations and the meetings we went to over in Geneva, and the significance of the time at which we went and our invitation over there. And understand that when we were over and did, we were invited to come have input on the. Elaborating the articles of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, which is similar to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights that all nation states around the world have to honor. So, and you know what I'm saying? The United Nations is supposed to be all about human rights, and it is, from my experience. It is an organization that is promoting the notion of securing the rights of individuals in defense of their nation violating them. So if you're an individual and your nation or the nation state that's occupying your land is violating your rights as a human, that's what it's all about. But ultimately, when you understand the United Nations, their only power is the economic power. If a nation is misbehaving, they're going to suffer economic sanctions. Economic sanctions.
Yes.
Nations. So, I
The chat room is asking for your website because I believe that people want to actually get their hands on that map as well.
Okay, it's you can go to hotep.org, hotep.org. You can go to pyramidsinamerica.org and go click on Indigenous People. You go to Indigenous People, there'll be a link to the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People. You can go read it. It's very eloquent, and you'll find articles in there. I would say look at specifically article 4, 5, 6, and 7, articles, I think it was articles like 23 through 29. Read the whole thing, because some articles are very pertinent, in terms of Moorish people applying our rights as defined through the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People, now we have a platform for redress when we're dealing with issues of being allowed to practice our cultural traditions and are using our plants, our herbs, our water, our remedies, teaching our children our culture, our language, our belief system. All those matters have been addressed on the international plane. So when someone says the Ouachita were just over in Geneva with just a few other indigenous people, there for over 25 years, indigenous people have been going to meet and gather to create that declaration. The emphasis is over there 10 years in 1996 and 1997, and 10 years later, it was finally ratified. And it's just beautiful to come back and read and see how the main issues covered by the Imperial Ouachita Nation in terms of articulating our concerns with the issues of health, access to land and water, and the issue of land rights particularly, but most important was the issue of self-determination and the right to nationality. And everything that we discussed in all the many forms we went to are clearly included in the Declaration. It's beautiful to see indigenous people gaining the respect and gaining actual tools. They can go in and see, how do I engage the local state or federal government in terms of arguments? And there's within that Declaration that Obama just recently assigned and they recognized for the United States, because originally the previous administration didn't want to recognize the Rights of Indigenous Peoples Declaration. But thankfully, President Obama has recognized the Declaration of Rights of Indigenous People, and it's not a tool for us to become negative in our behavior, but understand we have plans and we have issues, and we can use that as a legal instrument in order to get redress in terms of achieving our objectives, our positive, constructive, national, divine objectives.
Indeed. Okay. At this particular time, because now there are a lot of hands up in the call queue, I want to go to the callers. Okay?
Okay.
So caller calling from 786. That's 786-308. Peace. Hold on.
Peace.
Peace, caller.
Yeah, it's Fire Vibes.
Peace, Fire Vibes.
Peace. Yeah, I'm just calling in, listening in again, and I totally understand what the brother's building on, you know. I felt that way, and he just, you know, put it in the words for me to actually be able to do the knowledge, you know what I'm saying, to myself. So that's what it's about, you know. It's about your vision, your creation, your creativity, you know?
Absolutely.
So, yeah. So I just want to give thanks, you know what I mean?
Absolutely, brother. Thanks.
Word.
All right.
Yeah.
Peace. Okay. We have another 786 call in, 786-222, 222, 786. Peace.
Peace. I wanted to say, I'm not really sure if I was understanding him when he was saying that we can't get so caught up in fear and propaganda in the media. But I know that we live in a very chaotic world right now, and not that I let the media put fear into me, just from what I see in everyday life. And I think that it's very important that people have a supply of food and learn how to garden and things like that. Not saying that this would be your main focus every day and let your life be consumed with that, but I think that that is something that is very important at this time that we're living in, that people should also entertain, because, you know, you don't want to be someone that if shit do hit the fan, you're somewhere begging for stuff or really just, you know, don't know how to survive just because you were always thinking everything was going to be okay.
Yes, sister. So sister, I don't disagree with you. I told you, not only should we have resources in case something goes wrong, we should have resources to go out and help other people.
So down in the Ouachita, we've been there. We were down here through two hurricanes, and it was beautiful to see brothers just showing up with food and different things, ice and generators. And, you know, we had extra generators. So it was good to see people who understand the concept that we were prepared. So to approach it don't approach it from a negative perspective. Plan for it. If you think it might happen, plan for it. Take proactive measures. Don't become reactive after the fact, you know, unprepared. And that's just proper pre-planning. So even now, here it is.
That's right. I didn't know. I'm sorry. I didn't know if I didn't understand you or not. If you were saying don't plan for it, or I was just kind of confused. Like, okay, well, what is he saying? Like, plan for it or don't plan for it, or everything going to be all right? Or
I'm saying don't worry about it. So just recognize it. I mean, really analyze your situation at all. You should always do an inventory of your life, your resources, your schedule, and reassess. I'm constantly writing down notes and assessing my daily tasks because I have to be mindful, or else I'll waste time. And we all have to become mindful of that. And when we really have a long-term vision and plan you're working on with other people, when the lights go out and there's a food shortage, if you're righteous and you're working with other people are going to bring you some food. There are people who love you and are concerned about you and trust in you, and you can trust on them that, okay, the lights went out, I know brother going to show up over here, you know. And there are people who amongst the Ouachita community down here, the Moors down here, somebody's growing something, somebody can build something, you know, somebody can lay concrete, somebody can, you know, has a chainsaw you can borrow, somebody has a truck you can borrow. So we share and share alike. So we have that sense of, there's no sense of anybody having a shortage or a lack. Because if one person has it, we all have it. And that's just something that it is not, it's common amongst other cultures, but amongst our people in particular, you can take people born of the same parents, and they won't share resources. They can't live in the same house. When you talk about going back to the ancient ways, the true practice of unconditional love and sharing, so that there's not a thought of a famine. The whole idea of a famine in Africa is ridiculous. You have the rainforest and the greatest green belt on the continent and mineral resources, so you have people starving. That's just a mismanagement and misrepresentation of resources over there. So it's a mindset. It's not a matter of don't prepare for it. It's approach it from a very positive, preemptive perspective.
Okay. Absolutely. Caller.
Mhm.
Yes. Did he answer your question?
Yes, he did. I understand him better when he say just look at it from a positive perspective.
Right.
So yeah, maybe I missed that part, but yeah, now I mean that makes a lot more sense to me. So yeah, I agree.
Thank you. Thank you for your question.
Give thanks. Peace. Okay. Caller, I want to go to caller calling from the 404-587. Caller, peace.
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 Peace, peace, no the ledge. Peace, how y'all doing? This is KT, the Arc Degree, tuning in.
Peace, Arc Degree.
I want to extend my thanks, gratitude, and love to the brother Brother Umar. I've heard a lot about you, brother. You've been coming down to Atlanta for some time, and I've never been able to make it to your particular meetings, but my brother always has been able to get there, Brother Dice, and every time he comes from there, and, you know, he's rapped with you, he always fills me in on just all the insight that he's gained, you know, from the information put down. So I'm glad that you're back, and, you know, you were able to make it on my brother's show, so, you know, you could let the people know the information.
Oh, yes, please. Let the people know when you will be back in Atlanta, in the land of Atlantis, doing your lecture.
Okay,
I believe it's next year.
Thank you, brother. I'll be in Atlanta next Saturday, February 12th, at Conley, Georgia. It's at the New Morning Light Baptist Church in Conley, Georgia. It's in southeast Atlanta. Oh, I think right off of 285. You can I think the address is 1392 Conley Road, Conley, Georgia. South, just if you look at the map, it's just east of the airport, south of the city of Atlanta.
Now I had two questions, two part joint, and one of them was first we not too long ago, me and a couple of my brothers went out to Elberton, Georgia, to the Guidestones. And in doing so, you know, on the research that we did, you know, we found out that Elberton was the granite capital of the world. Now, when I was looking at the pictures of the quarries over the years that they had posted, I couldn't help but notice that a lot of these quarries look like they used to be structures back in the day that were broken down. So I came to a conclusion that at one point in time, those are where pyramids stood, and that the quarry corporations broke those pyramids down and started selling the granite, you know, throughout the world to make money to feed into the colonists. I wanted to know from your take or from your perspective, is my perspective in the right direction? Am I reaching, or have you come across anything that would make it look like, you know, I was on to something?
Well, brother, in pyramids in America, I talk about a place called Okmulgee, which is in central Georgia. And
Georgia,
in Okmulgee, when they first discovered that site, they weren't looking for a mound or a pyramid. They were bulldozing what they thought was a mountain for a railroad, and they came across millions of artifacts and bones. And later they found under one of these ancient earthen pyramids, a chamber, a giant lodge, high roof, circular lodge. And inside that lodge under Okmulgee in the middle of the state of Georgia today, they found it was 50 seats around this room. It was all kind of perfect symmetry in the construction of the beams and the ceiling. And they could see there was some high science to the building of this room. And the last three seats were elevated, with the seat in the middle being the highest, and it was very clear that this chamber, underground chamber lodge, was of a very significant and sacred place for the ancient mound builders right there. And I think the location you're talking about is very nearby. I mean, within a few, you know, less than 100 miles away.
Right, okay. Second part is you mentioned Watson Break earlier, and it's funny because I haven't heard anybody else bring this particular location up, and I was researching it real heavy about 6 months ago. Now, I know at Watson Break, what makes it so fascinating is the fact that they found these artifacts that were perfectly carved spheres and perfectly carved cubes of crystal. That they found at these sites. And I wanted to know, did you come to any particular conclusion on what these particular tools were used for?
Brother, the what they call Watson Break is actually the Ouachita Lunar Mounds. It's just south of the city of Monroe. It's right next to the city, the township of Richmond. Her Highness, the Emperor of the Ouachita, established the township of Richwood, Louisiana, right near the Lunar Mounds, because in her book, Return of the Ancient, when she talks about Grant, going every month, walking to see everybody, and every full moon, every month, he would go to the Lunar Mounds, what they call Watson's Break. So this place, Watson's Break, with these artifacts you speak of, are very, very significant. I mean, we're probably 20 years away from a true appreciation of what you have there at Watson's Break, the Lunar Mounds. And in my book, We're in Ouachita, we talk about that. Over 10 years ago, I wrote about the Lunar Mounds, and I didn't even know they were called Watson's Break at the time. I had to learn, you know. But the Emperor talked about it in her book, is the Lunar Mounds that old Charlie Grant Walker will walk to. And Charlie Grant Walker is one of the people who was alive during the time of Marquis de Maison Rouge. The French nobleman who came over here and married into the Ouachita family. So, So Watson's Brink is a famous place. When you talk about Makita Mason rules, you go look for his land grant, you'll find that Watson's Brink is part of the land grant that the Empress and then the Makita Mason rules had. And if you go even further, or just deeper, you understand the concept that Louisiana is full of Cajun people, Creole people, right, these mixed mulatto people. And you understand that the Frenchmen, Makita Mason rules that came into so-called Louisiana, Washita Valley, was supposed to bring in 30 royal families from France. But he didn't bring in 30 royal families. He brought in 30 royal single men, knights, noblemen from France running from the guillotine of the French Revolution in the 1790s. Here they show up in 1790s in the Washita, and they're writing about Richwood. So right where Lunar Break, the Lunar Mounds, and the city of Richwood are, you can see in the book writing 1,000 years ago, talking about 100 years ago, talking about the people there. You will see writing from a man called Ben de Bastrop, a man who modern historians try to blast, in spite of the fact he got a huge land grant from the King of Spain. The modern people try to blast him to discredit him and try to discredit his land claims. But Makita Mason rules and Baron de Bastrop write about the ancient people who are all over the land. And you find a document in the Empress book, Return to Ancient Ones, where it's talking about how the Spaniard does not want to violate the rights of the ancient ones. And he's asking the governor of Louisiana, Governor Carondelet down in New Orleans, to grant him some different land so he's not to disturb the ancient inhabitants. And these are the people who were upon the Bayou de Fia, right there in the city of Monroe, and where they have the college campus now, where they had a place called Cypress Point. These huge cypress trees that once stood as the gates of the Imperial Palace for the Washita Nation right there. And it's just amazing to understand that the history of our people is very evident, and that the mounds, the pyramids you have, are significant. So right there near the Lunar Mounds, Watson Brink, just north of Monrovia, a place called Frenchman's Bend. It's a very exclusive community. But there, too, they excavated pyramids, mounds, structures beneath them. So understand, in Georgia, you not only have these mounds that are built there for people to live upon, and they built temples upon them. We're talking about four-sided triangular mounds. We're talking about in Iowa, you have a series of earthen mounds in the shape of birds, of bears, elephants. In Wisconsin, you have hundreds of mounds. Just around the capital of Wisconsin, the city of Madison, Wisconsin, was a concentration of thousands of mounds. In one county in the state of Missouri, thousands and thousands of earthquakes in one county, all over Ohio. There's a book in Tennessee called The Aboriginal History of Tennessee that talks about the giants and the people with the double rows of teeth in Ohio found in these ancient mounds. And all these were discoveries actually excavated and recorded by the Smithsonian Institute in their exploration of the mound builders in the late 1800s, you know. So that information is well documented. It's just not propagated in the education system. Even today you have these scientists, archaeologists out here doing sincere work. But once the historians get their work, the analysis is not translated, and you will find that the professional people outside Louisiana don't even want to discuss the mounds here because they're way too old. They're way beyond any conceived notion of indigenous people or Native American or Indians in this land.
Indeed, brother. Powerful. That's what I'm talking about. Brother Blue.
Yes.
Would it be all right if I go ahead and let the family know the address to the class on Monday? Would that be all right?
Yes, please quickly.
I'll be real quick. For the class that Red and Blue discussed about at the beginning of the show in Atlanta, on Monday at 7 o'clock, it's located at 1290 Knotts Avenue. That's 1290 KN as in Noble OTTS, Knott's Avenue in East Point, Georgia. If you got any further questions, you can contact Red or Blue. They can give you further information on it. 1290 Knott's Avenue, East Point, Georgia. And with that, I'd like to thank Brother Umar for the elaborate answers to my questions. I do appreciate your time and patience, and y'all have a beautiful evening. Thank you.
Thank you, brother.
Yes, indeed. Peace. Good thanks, Brother KT.
Thank
Peace.
You.
Absolutely.
Much respect.
Okay.
Much respect.
Yes. Caller. The next caller we have is caller calling from 770-795. Peace.
Peace. How you doing, Brother Umar?
Peace, brother. How you doing there?
Peace, peace. This is Brother Yazoo.
Brother Yazoo.
We spoke a while back.
Brother Yazoo Bay.
We got Brother Yazoo Bay, yes.
Good segment. How
you
doing? You
know
there,
I'm half good, good. And you know I got a hit to you with something very important.
I'm ready.
Something that inspired me, you know, because of one of my uncle, Prince Ramesses Bey, you know, he was a captain of the Empress and doing all of the time where everybody was going down to represent the Empress. When the United Nations, we had lost some very great people, and one of them was your mate. Could you go and expound on how serious it is about us, you know, nationalizing and coming together, and what type of steps should we take during this time when we have, you know, people like the United Nations and so forth like that coming down on our people and doing these unjust things. And it's very important that we get your perspective and the things that you have experienced, because a lot of people don't know the that's part of the history and how serious it is, how everybody just started to, you know, get wiped out, how the Empress went into a coma, doing all of this happened around the same time. And that's all I really want to put out there. I wanted to get your take on that, you know, and what you would like to advise people that's really trying to figure this puzzle out, very interested into the Ouachita. Cannot get the book, the ancient ones, and would like to get your information. We would like to get that take from you, my brother.
Okay, I also want to be clear, because as you recall, you know, even beyond the recent period, the history of the Ouachita is that the people who've been actively engaged in fighting for the rights, the ancient Turners, Washingtons, Tunica, Ouachita people, have been constantly murdered and slaughtered, literally, actually. The heirs of Henry Turner, the Tunicas, Marquis de Maison Rouge, and the Empress, who actually occupied that area around Monroe, have been attacked for years. If you are familiar with Return of the Ancient Ones, in Empress's book, she documents the trial where the Turner family win a judgment for their land rights against the United States. And after that, the judgment was passed in their favor, the people, family, were literally attacked and tried to be murdered, all of the heirs to Henry Turner. And that has been a legacy from that time. That was 1848. June 19th, 1848, there's documented evidence of a judgment in favor of the heirs of Henry Turner that included land of the Marquis de Maison Rouge and the Bastrop land grants. And the Empress was able to go out and have that land returned to her, tax adjudicated land returned to her in the name of the Ouachita. And that's a very serious thing she had, and that activated her going out and empowered her to actually establish her sovereign authority. And we were able to travel as a sovereign free people for a couple of years when we went around the world to conduct business. The Empress was able to go out and exert her sovereign authority and power. And it was just a wonderful thing to know and to also demonstrate to the world that there's a race of indigenous people of color in America. We have a nationality. We have a land. And it's nice to know that after all these years, the rest of the people, so-called mainstream and unconscious Moors, are becoming aware of the fact that our history is far greater than the story of slavery, and that we have an indigenous history. And now it's time for us to reach out to all the other people of color, the so-called red man, so-called brown man, yellow man, all these false colors or these illusions, because we're all one. We're Asiatic. We're Moors. You just pick a name, but most and foremost, we are men and women with children and parents, okay? We are men and women. Hopefully we are good men and women with children and parents, and we're going to move forward. So with the Empress of the Ouachita and Brother Ramses is dead now. The brother mentioned my mate. She died. A lot of people have lost their life in the name of the Ouachita. A lot of people have lost their life for years. The Empress family itself, it's very important that they stay protected and safe. And there's a lot of things being said and thought, but most important, the Empress was very serious about protecting her family and keeping them out of danger in spite of her activity, because some people may not have agreed with her and supported what she was doing with her family. She did not want to put them in jeopardy, but she did not neglect her calling from the Creator. Because what the Empress did was truly a spiritual thing. You had to have been around her to understand the spiritual context in which she operated. Because she's just a human being like the rest of us, and I could see at times, she just didn't want to be involved, but she was just faithful to her Creator. She was just a very inspirational in her faith. And now I've learned from her so well, and it's empowered me to understand that it starts with your faith. If you have faith in your belief system and it's true and it's unshaking, you will be successful. I think regardless of what you claim to believe, if your faith is strong and you have purpose and that faith gives you direction and makes you act right, makes you be just and fair and true. That is the ultimate IQ test. You know, it's like the scale of Mayotte. You know, you have your heart placed in a jar and weighed against the feather of truth, the feather of Mayotte, and as your heart is light as a feather of truth. That is the ultimate IQ test. That's how you measure a human being. So we need to measure ourselves. Is your heart light? And if not, you must move to that position. And what you had with the Empress, you had people around her who were ready to give their life. Brother Jamal, Sister Dr. Inyeo Shun Bay, who lives in the Atlanta area, that sister and her mother were down in the Ouachita, and they understood the possible dangers of being that close to the Empress at the time. Because once the Empress went over to the United Nations in 1996, the first year we went over there, the Empress had been in touch with the United Nations for years. Herself, the Empress was actually a representative at the Organization of African Unity. She was a member of the Organization of National Organization of Mayors. She dealt with different politicians in Washington, D.C. She received many awards as being an archivist, and researching the work her grandmother left for her to build this legacy that enabled her to actually go out and establish recognition for the Imperial Ouachita Nation globally, which allowed the Empress to issue diplomatic passports to allow the members of the Ouachita Imperial United Nations delegation to travel on our own sovereign travel documents, passports. Well, the other Native American who came to the Indigenous Peoples Conference traveled on U.S. passports. the Imperial Ouachita Ministry of Vital Statistics and the Imperial Ministry issued passports for us to travel that was recognized for years as we traveled back and forth through to Geneva and to the Netherlands, to The Hague, and to the so that was a feat that I'm only now beginning to appreciate, that the Empress had established her sovereign authority. And we went out and we went to the United Nations the first year, and I was able to stay over there and study and gain my credentials in human rights. And the second year we went over there again, and at that time, the Empress had come back and she united with other indigenous people. And at that time she united with the King and Queen of Hawaii, King Kahi Nui and Queen Hakai Nui Wahine of the Kingdom of Hawaii Nation, traveled with us to the United Nations in 1997. The second year we went, and the Queen of Hawaii actually was able to put up and present a statement. And today they are still working toward building indigenous rights for the native Hawaiians and the people out in Hawaii. So it's very important to understand that the work we did in the United Nations is a work that was done by human beings collaborating. So when someone says the United Nations went in and did something, the United Nations is nothing but a workshop, you know, symbolically. It's a place where people come together, bring their tools, and this is the United Nations is a location and a forum for people to get together, agree on something, and act on it. The only power the UN has is that of economic sanctions, unless there's some military action going on. And it takes a lot for the United Nations to actually go in and truly righteously enforce military rule. They're often just peacekeepers, you know. So we, the children of Ouachita, we are the peacekeepers in our land. Whatever it says return of the ancient ones, she's not talking about a land grab or a seizure. You're talking about stewards of the land coming back and building pyramids. Because those pyramids were actually energy vortexes. Many of those locations where the sites are located, Serpent Mound is a very sacred site in Ohio. But the same Serpent Mound you have in Ohio, you'll see in the back of my book, Pyramids of America, I list several mound sites around the world. So the Serpent Mound you find in Ohio, you find somewhat similar Serpent Mound over in Scotland, over in Ireland. Even up in Canada, there's a report of a Serpent Mound with similar characteristics of the Serpent Mound in Ohio. So there's, and you look at that mound has all kind of mathematical qualities and quantities and attributes that it would take a physicist to comprehend. So you talk about the pyramids in America, all these earthworks are pyramids by definition, fire in the middle. They may all be shaped like triangles. Many of them are conical. Some are actually built in the shape of giant human beings. Giant birds. And then you go into inside the mounds. Inside those mounds, you find a culture of people who were very, very talented craftsmen, fine carved sandstone figurines, and a lot of peace pipes. One of the most peculiar relics they found in all those mounds from Utah to Ohio to Louisiana were the presence of smoking pipes. Today, that is satirized in cartoons by showing Indians smoking peace pipes. The pipes they found in the mounds in Oklahoma and in Ohio were very, very elaborately carved out pipes with human figures on them.
That is peace, Brother Umar. And I just want to give you my peace and love, brother. I'm going to give it to the other people in the chat. Peace and love. See you at the lecture.
Yes, sir. I'll see you at the lecture. So does everyone know the address and the phone number? The lecture is going to be held in Atlanta. Again, I think it's going to be at the...
Yeah, I gave the number out in the chat. We could announce it on air.
Okay.
I believe it's...
The New Morning Light Baptist Church? Yes, sir.
Yes. Is it Brother John Foster's number, or is there a separate number?
That's it, John Foster. You have the correct number.
His number is 78-200-9619. All right, family, that's 678
1-800-919-6619. We normally do a meditation at 11:11. You know what I'm saying? It pretty much inaugurates the energy of the show and brings forth, you know, a solidification of the energy that we're dealing with for the particular night. So I would be interested to know, would you want to lead tonight's meditation? It's 11:11 to an 11:14 meditation, and you're free to bring forth, you know, whatever your heart tells you to bring forth.
My meditation will be in a meditation. I will have you simply close your eyes and begin to take long, deep breaths. Long inhale. Breathe into your diaphragm. Breathe into your diaphragm. And in your mind, you want to see this air flowing to your body. And as images pop in, you become an observer. Keep breathing. Focus on your breathing and become an observer of the thoughts. Don't get caught up in them. Pull yourself out of your body and observe yourself and understand the significance of what you're thinking. Don't judge it. Don't try to analyze it. Just observe and identify and focus on positives and negatives. Focus as you breathe deep. Breathe in slow, breathe out slow. Create a rhythm. As a musician, get in the pocket and get a flow, a consistent flow in your breathing. And now focus on the thoughts that attack you, those voices, and don't judge them. Just recognize the positive and the negative. Your objective is to focus on the negative. Make it such that the negative thoughts become the dominating thoughts in your mind. You want to be able to focus on the positive. You do that by creating your own thoughts, such that when you are overcome with negativity, you can evoke those positive concepts that you have pre-described that you're going to focus on. It may be just memorizing a poem, or remembering something your child asked you, or just taking a positive thought to supplant a negative thought that's trying to invade, and continue to breathe deep because there's power in that energy. In the air you breathe in, part of the oxygen you breathe in, there are minerals in the air, enormous minerals that you need, and when you breathe deep, you're able to actually capture those. So if you breathe deep, and you return to observing your thoughts, the positive and the negative. The negative is an illusion. It will pass away. Focus on your positive thoughts, organize them, and put them to work for you. Continue to breathe and open your eyes. Peace.
Indeed, indeed. Short and to the point.
Whether you understand, in you talk about the Washita and law, it's very simple, natural. Everything should be short, simple, and natural. And you put those things together. You know, when I was with the ancient ones, oftentimes there were very few words said. It was just a tone or a mood that you would pick up on, a vibration. It was nothing but a vibration. And you would so there's not a lot of words said, a lot of action taken. You speak, you know. And the point is, I'd rather see a sermon than hear one any day.
Mm. Indeed. Indeed. I mean, and that was a very, very impactful 3 minutes, you know what I'm saying? So it definitely has its effect. Let me continue to
go to the callers because we still have a bunch of hands raised in the queue. And, you know, as soon as we finish the call queue, then we conclude for the night. I don't want to keep you up too late, brother.
No problem.
We have a caller calling from 310-310-270. 310-270. Caller, peace.
Peace, 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 son. Peace, peace, red pill, blue pill. Peace, brother Omar. Yes, yes, yes. Loving the work that you was putting out there earlier for the universe is most definitely resonating on a high level. I got to say, one question I want to ask you about the mounds in Ohio, and I know Red Pill and Blue Pill could attest to it because they don't been there before. Does that have any significance with the constellations? Because I've been doing some research about this constellation named Cygnus, and I know that our ancient ancestors that was over here, the Morzin that was over here, I know they basically was aligning stuff to it. So do you know anything about that?
Yes, brother. Most of the mound sites have a astronomical significance. They're not just arbitrarily built there. Oftentimes there are solar clocks. They are seasonal calendars. You go talk about the mounds in Ohio as well as in Indiana, you will find false horizon being constructed. You will find these mounds are set perfectly according to cardinal points, just like the Great Pyramid in Giza. You'll find these there's a lot of science to them, and that the mounds in Ohio there, as well as the mounds in Illinois near Cahokia, the Great Monk Mound, they call it Monk Mound. There's a place called Woodhenge, like 48 posts nailed in the ground, and it's like a solar clock. It's like it's a seasonal clock. In Arkansas, near where they have what they call the Toltec Mound, and several of the mound sites you'll find that those mounds are lined up so that on the first day of winter, for example, you'll find a particular set of mounds lined up. And the people in the village there 1,000 years ago would know to work in that area where the sun lined up for the mound, or in the wintertime, or if a particular hunting season, those mounds were used as clocks and calendars and for many purposes, you know, beyond just a structure. And what's much more, understand, when you talk about a pyramid, those mounds generated heat and energy. Biocosmic static electricity that would be created amongst the mounds. Even now, you can feel it. If you ever go to the region they call Poverty Point, the indigenous name is Alnuka, the bird mound. Anyone who's been there before will tell you a total change of energy. Total change of energy. When I go atop the mound, the bird mound, I have yet not to cry. The brother asked about Brother Ramses. There's so many people like Brother Ramses who I climbed on top of that mound with and cried, and today they're dead. Brother Omar Bey from Cleveland, today, I remember being on top of that mound with Brother Omar Bey. Today he's dead. He's passed on. Sister Gia is on the mound. And we were crying together. Today she's passed on. Brother Kadi, the great solar energy brother who worked with the Empress, he went around the world and started solar projects because he couldn't find anybody here to work with him with his great brilliance. Now we have Brother Manu up in upstate New York carrying on the legacy of that brother Kadi. So when I think about the mound, think about all the people and the ancestors and how, I mean, I'm sure there are people who went with us to the mound one time. I was guiding people to the mound during one of the conferences. I got to the top of the mound, and I just started crying, broke down crying. And it was just difficult for me to actually go on those mounds without feeling something. I don't want to claim pain or negativity, but I would cleanse. My spirit would flush on those mounds. So it's a very, very, very a very serious thing, man, to go and like the brother said, you go to these sites and you're unconscious and you might be surprised because there's a energy, not to say supernatural energy, but there's a real cosmic energy that flows at those sites. And the sites in Ohio, the sites in Illinois, the sites in Wisconsin, even the sites in Southern California. There are mounds all over California, all over Arizona, Utah,
across the nation. There are evidence of mound building cultures in Oregon, even up in Seattle. They got mounds in Seattle. So across the continent, I go to Toronto and Ontario, Canada. There's evidence of mounds up in Toronto, up in Ontario. I discovered the presence of a serpent mound in Ontario, Canada. Blew my mind. All these years, who would have thought? So the important thing here to understand with the book Pyramids in America, it's a book that's written very general. It's written in the language, so it's about to be translated into 7 different languages. It's going to be in Spanish, in French, in Russian, because people from around the world come and ask more questions than people here in America. I have more books being sold around the world than right here in America, and now they're translating in other languages. So now Pyramids in America is teaching people from outside our culture that there was once a culture in America. When they come to the United States, they're not going to Disneyland. They're going to get Pyramids in America, drive around the country, and go visit these ancient relics. You know, so it's important to understand that what you have in the idea of the mound builders, it's evidence that long before you had the American melting pot, you had the Moorish melting pot. The Moors have always been here, the people of Mu. The Moors of North Africa are my Moorish brothers, the Moorish Science Temple, who are, we understand the significance of the Moorish flag, present-day flag of Morocco, and our connection to our brothers and our Kibulan. The Kibulan connection is strong. It will never disappear. But it's time for us to put our buckets down where we are here, unite ourselves, and build those institutions we need, that if we do not have a nation, we have the equivalent of one. You understand, Walmart has its own nation. They don't need me if they have its own nation. Disney has its own nation. There are different entities that without even having any kind of heritage, legacy, or connection, been able to form united minds, create institutions, structures, buildings, system building. We are in a system building business, okay? I digress again. Forgive me.
No, you're good. You're good, brother. You're good. You're good. But not to hold y'all up, Blue Pill and Red Pill, I just want to ask one more question about, you know, being that we've been over here for so long, and I know that you know, y'all know about Queen Pi and, you know, the ancient Egyptians that committed the Cremations that were over here already. They, I know in Indiana they have found, and that, this is like from years back, I'm realizing in National Geographic when they had the Black Pharaohs come out, the issue, and they were talking about Queen Pi and King Pi and how they were finding stuff over here in the mountains in Indian caves. And different mounds and stuff like that. They were finding gold from Kemet, and they were saying that they know that. Go ahead.
Because
I'm asking
you a question.
Go ahead.
It's correct. I mean, if you understand some of the findings, like my grandma come from the territory, and where she come from, it's called Salazar County, Oklahoma. But there's a place they call Spiral. She used to say Sparrow. I thought she was saying Sparrow like the bird Sparrow, but it's actually Spiral. And she said, we have pyramids back in Sparrow. You know, so when I went back to Oklahoma looking for Sparrow, I found Spiral. And there they had these ancient pyramids there. And back in the 1930s when the people discovered them, they went there and they found so much treasure, gold, pearls, artifacts, and it's all kind of records. They called it King Tut's Treasure of the Arkansas Valley.
Mm.
So you go into those mounds there. If you understand the snickers, like the Serpent Mound. Serpent Mound in Ohio. Who owns that? Do you know?
No.
Harvard University owns the property rights to Serpent Mound in Ohio. Why is that?
Huh.
It's an asset. Can you? It's a piece of property. You can have collateral against. So if you go to the Peabody Museum at Harvard University, our president's great alma mater, there's so much evidence of mound builders in their artifacts. I mean, there's evidence. You go to the a mound in Virginia. It's one of the furthest east mounds in found in North America, in terms of a Mississippian pyramidal mound over in Virginia. It's in the book Pyramids of America also. From that mound, like you find artifacts. I saw it in Harvard University also. Like, wow, so Harvard's been down. People in Boston been down in Virginia digging in mounds, And I got stuff from Ohio, Virginia, and all around the country in Harvard's museum. Then I found out in University of Oklahoma, University of Texas, all these schools, even in Louisiana, University of Louisiana Lafayette has a wonderful department of archaeology that has classes that allow some of the students to go out and participate in present-day excavations of mound sites. Because as we speak right now, they are still digging up evidence of ancient sites in Louisiana that we may never hear about. So the research is going on as we speak, and it's important to understand the significance of the mound is that it shows the evidence of a cohesive empire of people. It wasn't one nation. It was the empire washed under the Demonia. Many nations of people, but they were all connected. That is the splendor of what they call Poverty Point, and also sites up in Arkansas, in the Ouachita Valley up there, and in Alabama and Mississippi. You have evidence down here at the mouth of the Mississippi River. It's like at the mouth of the Nile River in Alexandria, Cairo, in the city of Nim, near the mouth of the Mississippi River, New Orleans, Baton Rouge, up to Arkansas. We have our own city of Mim, Memphis, with a pyramid there. So ironic. So it's no mistake that the Ouachita, who have been recognized by Western archaeologists as being the location, the actual Ouachita land, the land, the Ouachita River, location of some of the oldest evidence of mound builders in North America. Not so much the oldest people. We're talking about the oldest civilizations in North America were mound builders. We always hear about some people who walked across the Bering Straits and came to the United States, and they called them the Native Americans, and it's true. I'm sure some people came across the Bering Straits. I'm also sure some people took some ships and came across the Pacific Ocean. We must understand that in America, in Western education system, there's an argument that very few people are aware about, and the evidence of mound builders is being held hostage by this argument in Western academic world between the concept of isolationism and diffusionism. And it's very simple. Isolationism says the Christopher Columbus story that in 1492, Columbus came over here and discovered America and... Yeah. South Indians. The fugitivism says that this land has always been occupied by people and been visited by people from Africa, be it the Mandingos or the Nubians or the Phoenicians and the Moors, people from Asia. Asiatics have been here forever. And if you understand the true nature of world geography, before they tried to cut a little slit, they call the Suez Canal, it, the continent of Afro-Eurasia is one piece of land. The idea of Europe being a separate continent is just a bit of cultural arrogance. It's called Eurasia or Afro-Eurasia. If you were to take a piece of the Asian continent and separate it, the only logical one would be the country of India, because India is actually set on a separate tectonic plate from the rest of Eurasia. But when you look at the concept of the world and what we were taught, we have been deceived. And a lot of people react like I first did, negatively, angry. And I've quickly learned, thanks to Her Royal Highness, into the Ouachita, that it's all about peace. You maintain peace, inner peace, inner love, and you go forward and you build. You become constructive. You take control. And what you produce, if you're getting angry, you're going to reap anger. If you become positive in the face of anger and the impossible, and you retain faith, you are invincible, because the universe and the Creator is with you, because God is good. Simply put, real simple, good comes from God. God is love. One love is law. In the Ouachita.
Indeed.
That simple.
Definite. And one love, brother. One love.
One love.
Appreciate it. Thank you, caller. Peace.
Peace.
Okay. Give thanks. I have another caller coming in. Caller from the 678. Peace. Am I there? Hello? Peace. I can't hear anything. Peace, Brother Umar.
Peace.
This is KB. Peace. This is KB.
Yeah.
I commend you for your work. I love what you're doing. Two notes. I had two questions I would like to ask you because that's my area of study also here. One is I want to make a comment that, a lot of people fail to realize that these Americas or these mound builders were a mixed race of people, Asiatic and blacks. You can see that in the pre-Columbian pottery. So the whole concept of what was going on here, it really appeared that there was great unity and really, you know, no racism at one point because we all were trading and sharing cultures together. one question I wanted to ask, because there's certain things that I'm looking for answers also, because I've been to certain places, historical societies in Ohio, and one thing that seemed to be missing from the mound museums is like the bones. So, and then I was looking at anthropology and the skull structures and trying to figure out, well, has there ever been any genetic testing linking us, you know, into the mound builders, which we know that we are, but scientific evidence of that sort, because the bones seem to be stashed away in most of the historical societies. The other one, it begets me right now. But if you can answer that, if you have any information on that, and the other one is, I know a lot of this mound history seems to be written off, and a lot of the treasures are hidden from us, and it seems that they leave us with the pottery to play with, artifacts, or even written documents of the books or any spiritual writings and teachings of these people.
Okay, brother. Yes. Yeah. So the evidence you look for in terms of the bone. So let me touch on this. You talk about the ancient ones. We're talking about not only an area where you're going to dig, talking about several thousand years. So, for example, at Poverty Point, if they dig down, you know, you have the archaeologists showing how we dig down 4 feet, 5 feet, 6 feet. And in those few feet, you're talking about 3,000 or 4,000 years of evolution and people. So bones they found in the mounds, they have hidden, they have destroyed. One time, one of the people over in the UN, one of the forums we sat in, was an indigenous brother from over here, and he came to the meeting after lunch. And he apparently had been drinking, he was intoxicated. He was going to give a lecture on the very topic you asked about what happened to the bones. Because he was a person who was assigned to the Smithsonian Institute from his Native American group to go out there and deal with these bones, over 60,000 caskets of bones stored in the Smithsonian Institute, were put in a barge and dumped in the ocean. Mm. So you understand, you go just simply read the writing of what was found there. If you want to find what's found in the mounds, you must go back to the actual time it was being done, because what's written in modern history is controlled by the modern historians, not the scientists who did the digging. There are people like Ephraim and Squire, these two gentlemen in Ohio who did a lot of excavation. I think one of them was actually a physician. He has a book called Monuments of the Mississippi Valley.
Squire
and Davis.
If
you have a copy of We Are the Watchtower, there's a bibliography, the back of We Are the Watchtower, and also on the back of Pyramids of America, that list of several books that document a lot about the mound builders. There's a book actually published by the Smithsonian Institute. I think it had a dozen volumes of it on the mound builders, and then it clearly shows you the fact they actually found giant beings inside many mounds. Many mounds they found regular-sized people. Many mounds, understand, were built 5,000 years ago, 10,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago. But they were occupied 100 years ago. They were occupied 500 years ago. So sometimes you will find on some sites the remains of people who may not have been the original people there. You never know who the original people there. You're talking about a time we know. Like we speak now. When I speak, I have to speak in terms of what Western society can feel and measure. So I will cite the fact that some scientists who've recognized found something 5,000 years old. But I know we've been there for more than 66,000 years, 100,000 years. So I'm not stuck on these man-made calculations and measurements about history. We have always been here. We are the original man on the planet. So we talk about the bones that were found. And it's a magazine called, I think it's called Antiquarian magazines that came out in the 1800s. I will go online and look for Antiquarian magazines because those are actually very technical. I guess at that time you would call archaeologists, even though the science of archaeology has evolved a lot since the 1800s. Even then you had curiosity seekers. So if you go to each mound site, they take the mound site in Alabama, they call Moundville, the Black Warrior River Complex, a series of over 20 pyramid-shaped mounds right on the banks of the Black Warrior River, just south of Tuscaloosa, Alabama. You go there and look at those mounds there, my God, and you find that the evidence of they dug up skulls there. The people were not giants, but Tuscaloosa, the name Tuscaloosa, is the name of a 7-foot-tall black chief that was in Alabama, Tuscaloosa. The word Lusa is just a word for black. So you find Tuscaloosa, all kind of Lusas everywhere, all through Calaloosa, all through Florida, and the whole southeast region. The word Lusa is always synonymous with black in some translations, okay? The word Washa translated into black oftentimes. So you talk about what was found in those mounds, my friend, and there's so much evidence of hieroglyphic writing, of giant bodies. Sir. My son went on YouTube and showed me these clips of all these giants they shot all over the world. And you understand, even at the Spiral Mound in Oklahoma, one of the artifacts they found there was a body of armor made of all copper. And it was for a person at least 8 feet tall. And it's definitely 9 foot people being removed from so the evidence is clear. I mean, there's a book, there's this wonderful writer named David Hatchett Childress. I'm sure if you're interested in the topic of the mound builders, you've read Childress' work. He has several ones. His latest book is called The Mystery of the Olmecs, and he just busts all of the established mainstream historians' notion. And understand, I do a lot of research. I talk to a lot of people. And it's been made clear to me that there's a mandate to deny the existence of any African presence in America. There's a mandate. If you are in the Western education system, when you teach in a university in the United States or Europe, there's a mandate not to discuss any concept of any Africans in America before any Indians are ever. So the idea of the evidence of all those African artifacts and Oriental and Eastern Asian artifacts in the Grand Canyon cannot be discussed.
Yeah.
When you talk about finding slabs with hieroglyphics in New York and the Mormons taking those slabs of hieroglyphic letters and using them to write out their religious philosophy. You talk about mounds in Ohio where you find people seated inside sarcophagus, chambers within earthen structures, seated facing the east. Organized, giant people of both sexes, and next to them you have bowls with hieroglyphics carved on them. Who wrote hieroglyphics for the ancient people of Kemet? So there's no controversy. You ask about Egyptian coins being found in North America. They found Egyptian coins. They found Celtic coins. They found Nordic coins. But any time you find any evidence of the African presence in America, it's quickly called a fraud, a fake, it's defamed, and the whole notion of whatever inferior tag can be placed on it and marginalizing you can do to discredit it or vilify it is just pounced upon that aspect of history. One thing I talk about is for years, even before I worked the Emperor's, I had something called the Black Inventors Museum I would talk about, and people would get on my case and ask why I would talk about that.
I was trying to counter the negative image of our people. As a science teacher, I had students that I had to convince that we as a people of color can do science. Because for some reason, they had the impression that black kids can't do science. We can't do math. You know, we can't do math. So I had to go and teach them a legacy. And they quickly learn that when you know the greatness of your history, you know the greatness of your people, you know the greatness of what you can do. So it became very important to present images, positive images of our people. And understand that the whole notion of black and white and brown and yellow, again I say, is a false doctrine. It's because just in my own household, you know, my wife will call my son high yellow in a minute, you know, and you know how dark I am, and it's just a matter of genetics. Once again, none in context, you know. So in my own family, I got every shade, you know. I got chocolate, dark brown, beautiful brown, caramel. I have 6-7 children, man. So we have the rainbow here.
Yeah, I commend you for that because a lot of us who begin this research will run into these. Doubts, you know, through lack of certain evidence. But as you tie the laces of the world cultures, you can definitely see that. And myself, when I was in Tuscaloosa, I saw miniature sphinxes, but they were very worn and eroded, the faces of them. And you could just see the imprint of the headdress and the body of the whatever animal it was, but they resembled sphinxes. So that's all I have for you. And thank you very much. And
please,
you know, we got you here.
Peace. Thank you, caller.
Indeed. I want to go to the next call. There's still hands up in the call queue. Caller calling from 305. That's 305-773. Peace, caller.
Hey, Peace No Lunch family. This is V in Brooklyn. I just wanted to say hello. Thanks to Red and Blue Pill and to Dr. Umar Shabazz Bey. This is amazing information. Some things I've heard before and some things I'm just hearing for the first time. Just want to say thank you for sharing with us and for sparking a lot of us to keep searching and, you know, keep researching. And I just wanted to make a point on what you said earlier. It's just so important. The whole idea of the all being mental and just what you think about is what's going to grow in your experience and what you're going to attract to yourself and vibrate and resonate with. Because, like, personally, like, in 2008, I was all caught up in that whole, oh, my God, Bush is going to call martial law and he's going to be the dictator of America, you know? And it's just like there's a lot of ideas running around and there's a lot of theories, but you know, you have to focus on your personal experience and you have to be aware of what's going on, of course, and you have to kind of try to prepare and, you know, live a healthier life. But at the same time, I came to believe myself, like if you're living right and exact and you're, you know, with universal laws and when anything goes down, you'll be taken care of. You know, you'll be in the right place at the right time. So not to be, like, so paranoid. You know, that's just my own personal testimony, I guess. But I just want to say thank you.
Thank you, sister, because you're correct. That's just it. If you are in tune with the universe, you need not fear any negative consequence. If you're living, truly living your life in a positive way, and you know you're falling that way, there's something called inertia momentum. And by the same right, if you're caught up in negative thoughts, in a negative mindset, you will attract that same inertia. You're going to experience that. So when you talk about being conscious, consciousness is being in the now, an understanding as we study the past our ancestors laid out and we chart out the future, they're both illusions. All we have is right now. And that's a wonderful thing. Right now we can sit here and make a plan, and everything that happened in the past, nothing but a foundation to stand on. And as long as we don't keep it as a weight and a yoke, you know, an anchor to hold you from progressing forward, you have to let it go. You have to let go and not resist. So we've caught up in resistance, and we're just tricked into
our energy into a wrong, into a bad direction.
Right. All right. So thank you. I'm going to go back to listening now, but thank you for everything.
Thank you.
All right.
Peace, guys. Peace. Okay, okay. I have a caller calling from an unidentified number. Caller from 1111. Okay, caller from the 111 area code. Peace.
Peace. Peace. Peace, how you doing, brother?
Peace, caller. Yes, you are on the air live. Peace. You have a question, comment, or concern? Caller. Okay. I'm going to go to caller calling from 719-719-964. Peace, caller.
Peace.
Caller calling from the
719.
Okay.
Peace. I'm just listening. I apologize.
Indeed. No problem, brother. Peace. All right. I think that pretty much culminates all of the callers in the call queue for now. If anybody else feels free to raise their hand and ask any questions, comments, or concern, feel free to do so at this particular moment. If not, I'm going to ask Brother Umar one more time to leave the family with the information pertaining to where he will be next week, as well as pertaining to your information, your website, and any other information that's needed for them to get in contact with you or to purchase any of the materials that we spoke about tonight.
Okay. Thank you, brother. Brother, thank you so much for this hosting this call. It's not gone the way I would expect it, but I had anticipated nothing, but I'm very happy with the results, you know, in terms of information we've covered. And again, February 12th, that's next Saturday from 2 to 5, we'll be at the New Morning Light Baptist Church in Conley, Georgia. The address is 1392 Conley Road, Conley, Georgia, 30288. It's actually just outside the Loop, southeast Atlanta, outside 285 Loop in Conley, Georgia, just east of the airport. You can go in and Google your map question and get your location there. And the phone number to reach more information there is 678-200-9619. And quickly, I'll say my website is hotep.org, hotep.org, pyramidsinamerica.com, pyramidsinamerica.com. And you can go visit there, and we'll get in touch. And understand, I will be traveling to the East Coast once the weather breaks. So I know I'll be in Toronto, Canada, week of March 7th through the 11th. And from there, we're going to come down the East Coast through New York and Philadelphia, Baltimore area. We're going to be with Brother Nati over in Baltimore and go to D.C. and just come right down Richmond, Virginia, North Carolina,
shout
South Carolina, back to Atlanta. Okay? We're going to make a circle.
Yeah. Shout out to Nadia and the brothers and B-More, you know, and all of the indigenous family all across this continent, United States. I have another caller that just shot his hand up, and that would be a caller calling from a 313-978. That's 313-978 caller. Peace.
Peace. Life and peace to the family. Blue pill, brother, red pill, brother Umar.
Peace, family.
Peace, brother.
Excellent work. Great doing all the work, like you say, man. Piggyback on a couple of callers back, you know, doing the research, and I've been gathering the research for about 3 years now. And it's, like you said, you know, you be overwhelmed and so passionate and excited that, you know, you come at a negative, angry mode because you're so angry. But as you progress and learn, you start living, like you say, living your experience. But this is my question. Excuse me. I'm dealing with in the so-called territory of Michigan. It's not that much talk about the ancient Michigan tablets and what the Mormons have stashed all the artifacts that they had. They found in Michigan over like 1,000 all over the state. And then with the freeway system up 75, I was told that those used to be the mounds. How many mounds are there in Michigan?
Brother, the city of Detroit alone has thousands of mounds. You know, on page 41 of my book, Pyramid America, it talks about the Great Mound on the River Rouge. So where's the River Rouge in the city of Detroit? The Detroit River.
That's what city I'm in right now, River Rouge.
Yeah, the Rouge River and Detroit River, there were hundreds of miles. It says 4.5 miles from the center of the present-day city of Detroit, something called the Great Mound. It was 300 feet across, 200 feet long, 20 feet high, one of the dozens of mounds. All through the state of Michigan, there are mounds all over the state. And beyond that, like you say, those tablets you hear about, the Michigan tablets, are you familiar with the copper mines in Upper Peninsula, Michigan?
Right.
The Crystal Mounds in Crystal, Michigan, and the Fort Wayne Mounds right there.
Right. They were trying to say that it was forgery and all that, and I was kind of scratching my head, like, how did these people forge this? You know, they'd have found, like you say, over a thousand all over the state, and Michigan is big, you know, area from Detroit all the way up to up north, like you say, in the Upper Peninsula, where the copper mines, the copper mines and things like that. You know, it just amazed me. Then, like you say, it's a Caucasian European brother that's named Chad Stumacher. I can't pronounce his last name, but he's got a book called the Mystical Mitten, talking about the stargates, temples, and pyramids in Michigan, and all that, how Hart Plaza, and all that in that downtown area lines up, and it's a lot of energy coming from that area. Like you say, a lot of these corporations, and all that, they built their buildings on top of these miles.
Brother, I talked about down here, these major universities down here all found old mound sites to build their university on that site because there is energy. The mounds are energy receptors. Let's say a pyramid antenna, it receives energy. So you talk about building a bunch of mounds 1,000 years ago, those mounds actually generated energy. You know, talking about a heat, a thermal heat. Even when you go to Palm Point, they call it Palm Point, the bird mounds, they're famous for the firecrack rock. They would have these rocks that were just burnt up, cracked up rocks in the ground in these holes. The pits they found down here in Baton Rouge, they have a site here. Like you say, the site Mount Samuel, they leveled it. Where it's there now, ExxonMobil has a giant plant on the site of the Mount Samuel mound up to the Mississippi River in northern Baton Rouge. So these sites in Michigan, I'm sure that the automotive industry has utilized several mound sites because if you understand the concept, 1,000 years ago, people had a village sitting in the location in Michigan, several villages. That same location is still sitting there now, whether the native people said it or not, that's still a prime location. Location is everything, even today in real estate, location, location, location. And you understand that not just a commercial location, talking about a spiritual, how about this, an unseen energy at a spot. It has to deal with the constellations in the sky. Think about there are mound sites on the earth that if you match them up like the Dogons, they would match a constellation in the sky. The mounds, the way they're situated, they will match up with stars in the sky. The astronomy, or whatever it's called, astromacy, the ancient astromacy of the mound builders, the geometry, talking about how the mound sites are laid out, perfect geometry. How many people have perfect 90-degree angles? We had to understand. We had to know about the formulas of pi, 3.14159, and the golden ratio, 1.618. We had to understand those concepts long before the Pythagoras was here. We had those scientists part of our DNA. So you talk about people coming in and seeing fraud. Once again, I tell you, in America, it's not about academics. It's about maintaining the status quo. The status quo says that people of color are inferior, are uncivilized. So understand it's for real because people still must maintain a reason for something like slavery. I don't even go into slavery. But understand why were they able to take some people and enslave them and still talk about
life, liberty, and pursuit of justice. Because they say these people were uncivilized and weren't even human. When you come into a so-called North America and you find cities laid out, you go find something like the Bury Bird Mound, Poverty Point, and you find out that the same thing was in Etowah, in Georgia. People don't know when they go to the Etowah Mound up there just north of Atlanta. It had the same circular ridge formation along the river as you have in Poverty Point. So we understand the people at Etowah also can be found over in South Carolina, in North Carolina. So you find those, you find cultural traits, you find artifacts, you can find shells from North Carolina over here in so-called Louisiana. You find metal only in the Rocky Mountains near Colorado, you find over here in Alabama. So you can see any archaeologist going in and doing a dig and studying the artifacts, you say, wow. You also find symbols, the symbol of the Birdman and the serpent and the jaguar, all these symbols that are duplicated not only in so-called North America, United States, in Mexico, the Yucatan, down in all, just go down south to Central South America. You know, and you understand that when they do the cranial studies of the mound builders, they say the people they found in mound builders have the same cranium as the people they found along the coast of the Pacific coast of Peru. The Peruvian skulls and the mound builder skulls are similar. So you have people out there trying to make a distinction and say that that somebody didn't know that the people were disconnected. The people in South America didn't know people in North America. That there's this need to have that illusion that the people were disconnected. There was the isolation of people. When the reality, there was
Brother Doc, like you said, on ancient aliens, that's what they're going, gradually going towards now, that, you know, these people were one. They weren't separated like history thought they was. You know, they're doing that connection.
Yeah.
That's called unity. When you get rid of the separation, like I'm from Los Angeles, the Chicano brothers, what they call Hispanic here now, Latino, we call them Chicano. That's indigenous. And Chicano brothers and the black brothers, that we were all one. Oh, you'd have changed. It would have changed me growing up in L.A. But we didn't know we had something in common instead of we had this line drawn in East L.A. All over, you know, so the whole concept of uniting the people, look, it's not like, you know, people call me, and one time I get all these strange calls all the time saying, Brother Umar, why are you trying to steal our culture? And I'm saying, it's our culture. How can I steal our culture? But they want to see themselves separate from us because they have been victimized by white supremacy that makes black the last thing you want to be. I mean, you have people of all colors, because there are no black people. There are no white people. Ain't no brown people. But there's a social notion of a class. You know, if you go over to India still, the Dalit, the untouchable black people of India are still stigmatized in that caste system. And that whole idea of being connected to the colored people, you know, not knowing that you're a colored yourself until, you know, it's convenient. It's just a fear. So what we're trying to do is show, I'm hoping to show that there's not a division. Let's show the harmony. Let's show that in what you call Mexico, they not only had African-looking Olmec heads, they had some Asian-looking wrestling bodies. You go into Dr. Ivan Van Sertima's work, where he's going into the museum, that German, that famous German doctor, I remember his name, Van Woudenau.
Okay.
Had a museum of all the artifacts, beautiful African
kids
and women. Yes, brother, go ahead.
I don't want to cut your wisdom. We got 2 minutes left to this show. I want to say thank you. I want to tell her, yes, honest brother. And also, I-75 runs all the way through Ohio as well. It's a lot of evidence all along that route of mound culture, all along the highway, matter of fact. You know, they have indentations that are similar to Serpent Mound all throughout the meridian, the middle of the highway.
Check that
out. Family, the show has been sponsored by Greenleaf Herbal Solutions. That's www.greenleaf-herbs.com. Again, brother, real quick, just leave them your site.
www.hotep.org, H-O-T-E-P.org, and pyramidsinamerica.com.
Give thanks, and we shall see you in Atlantis when you arrive, brother.
One blessed love, brother. Peace. One blessed love. Peace.
Hey, brother. Peace to the family, and see you next cycle. Same bat time, same bat station. Peace.